Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that is dedicated to show you all the films on the planet three at a time. I am Oscar, and with me today will be Ralph, as usual. Luke is still overseas in Timbuktu, let's say, this time. Anyway, I'm doing the intro solo because of scheduling conflicts. Ralph had to, he had a hard out as far as our recording times were available. I'm recording this literally the morning this episode is due. I will be editing the rest of the morning slash night. So I'm doing the intro and the outro by myself. Let's see here. This is episode number 30th. And today's show will consist of, obviously, three films, three newish films. You know, I was, the last show came out really early because I had a vacation. No, not a vacation, but I took time off to go to Nevada for the other podcast I do. And so I released that episode early. It concluded our animation marathon. And in doing so, and now we have all this extra time, we didn't have a big chance to watch a bunch of newer releases. So we saw three films that came out roughly around the time when that episode came out and around this time around. So today's review will consist of Atomic Blonde, the latest action film from Charlize Theron. And then our second review is The Dark Tower, the Stephen King adaptation novels movie. And then we'll conclude our show with a horror movie, actually, called Annabelle Creation, which is a prequel, obviously. And we'll get into that one very shortly here. Let's see. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Podmoviecast is also the name of our Twitter handle. Jesus. That's my first day here. And then our otherpodcast.com, again, that's otherpodcast.com, is our website where you can find all the information on bonuses, marathons, fucking top tens, whatever we do. Every episode we've ever done is on there since last year when we revamped our previous show. And it's all on there for you guys to explore. And also, donations are a big thing on there. There's a tab there. And this month's bonus episode, for those who donate generously, any amount will give you this bonus episode. And that is Catherine Bigelow's Detroit. And for those who donate this month, we'll get it at the very end of this month or the first day of the, so it'll be September the 1st. For those who donate this month, we'll get that episode September the 1st for Detroit. If not, you will have to wait 5 months in the future to get that, which I think is December or January, I forget. So that would be much better to get it now. And it's a big Hot Topic film, and we all love Catherine Bigelow, so we chose that film instead for our review. So, and since I'm by myself here, I'm not going to really talk about what we've been watching. Rob did have two films, but again, we couldn't get to them. I had like 70. So I won't mention them. It's not a big deal. We'll save them for the next time. So without further ado, here is our first review of the evening with Atomic Blonde.
I chose this life. And someday, it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.
He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives and trust no one.
An undercover MI6 agent is sent to Berlin during the Cold War to investigate the murder of a fellow agent and recover a missing list of double agents.
What? Atomic Blonde, folks. Lady Bond.
As they call her.
What do you think?
Or as they've been saying in the commercials.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a quote from a critic or something.
Is it? Probably.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted to make it on the fucking preview.
Right, exactly. Jane Bond. We're reviewing the Jane Bond film.
Not her name, but yeah.
Jane Bond. Coining that here. Jane Bond.
Coining?
Yes. Charlize Theron, for an older lady, also, kind of because although James Bond usually, older actors, older British actors, of course, tend to play those on. So at least there ain't no young spy chicken.
Right.
Right. Although in this movie, she's kicking all sorts of ass.
Correct.
And getting all sorts of asses, too. She gets that nice French piece.
Right. You know, everybody wants her, also.
Everybody wants her.
She makes herself very provocative.
I wanted the French operative, too. More, actually.
Okay.
She's more my style, I guess. Anyway, so, Ralph, you picked these films. So what did you think of Atomic Blonde off the cuff?
So I didn't know what I was going to walk into. I thought it was going to be more like, I guess, what's that movie? The Secret Service.
I can't
think of it.
Oh my God, everyone's yelling at their.
Right, the sequel's coming out. Right, exactly.
Jesus.
Anyways, when you figure that one out, let me know.
Taylor's Men? No, it's.
Huh?
Groove's Men?
You're close.
Right?
Yeah, you're close.
I'm close.
Yeah.
Henchmen? No.
No. All right. Anyways.
Yeah, we're fucked up.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was going to be more like that, more action-y. Also, the trailers, from what I saw, like...
Oh, I thought you meant it was going to be more like a funny action, like ridiculous.
Right.
Action.
Well, I thought it was going to be a little mix of that as well.
Oh, okay.
I guess just because it felt kind of like that.
Kingsman!
It felt like that's what they were going for. Yeah, wake up the neighborhood.
That's why it's like 1 in the morning.
It was a little bit later than that, but yeah. And so me going into this, is it was either going to be one of two things. Action-y or kind of fun. Or action-y fun or funny action-y.
Okay.
So I thought that was going to be it. I did not know we were watching a legit spy movie.
And a period. Did you know it was a period film too?
No.
I did not know that from those trailers.
No, I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know it was from.
I was just watching her platinum blonde hair the whole time.
Right, exactly. They did a good job of keeping shit like around.
I mean, we watch it again. I'm like, oh, we're idiots. Look at that period setting. Look at completely. We see the Berlin Wall right there.
Right. Something. Well, you know what? You just kind of thought it was like, oh, she's infiltrating Russia or something.
Right. Which is
not to be a dick, but yeah.
Don't worry, they don't care.
Right. Yeah. Sure. But so, yeah, this is Cold War, like primetime Cold War, Berlin Wall about to come down.
Right, right.
So it's a really interesting. I liked it overall. It was fun to watch, to see what's going on and to find out who's this traitor for this thing. And she's all, it's all flashbacks, or it's all technically a story being told to you. So you're watching, you're watching things, the truth, I guess, happen. But you're being explained other things.
You're watching the truth happen.
Right. I guess that's the way they put it in the movie, if I want to spoil it. But, yeah, it was actually pretty cool. Had plenty of action, had a really cool, interesting story, and reason to, like, it wasn't just, like, it was like a debriefing mission. And that was, I thought that was really cool. Instead of watching something, like, happen, you know, live or whatever, or what you think is live in the movie, mm-hmm. like in a James Bond film.
True, yeah.
So, yeah, that I thought it was cool. What did you think?
So you did like that flashback-y style.
Yeah, I guess it gave some moments of pause and levity where you kind of just go like, oh, well, like, well, where are they going, I guess, with it?
And yeah, I guess.
And then
like,
you're being, what I liked about it in the end was like, it's an interesting thing because like you don't know if you're watching what's actually happened or if you're just... being told what just happened.
Yeah, you know,
watching that. That's,
so
I thought that was
here's
cool.
A good and a bad thing about that. So I think that as far as elements of the film, I do think the whole flashback debriefing, watching the movie as a debriefing thing, that so like we know she makes it out no matter what. Not that you wouldn't think otherwise if she wasn't being debriefed. Although, you know, never know. Maybe a movie will surprise you. I didn't like that because I think it leaned into some of the bad writing choices of this movie, which unfortunately, maybe the writing's the worst thing about it. Not to say it was bad necessarily. I just think that it was leaning to this trope of, not to say spy movies are all like this, but a lot of them are, or a lot of action movies are, or a lot of like murder thrillers are, and there's a lot of movies where this happens. And I consider that whole trope of her doing it somewhere between the best, which is like a Usual Suspects type, and the worst, which is like a Spy Game type. It's somewhere in the middle there. Remember Spy Game?
I never saw it.
Robert Redford and
I know what
Brad
it is.
Pitt. Robert Redford plays...
Wait, like, is it Brad Pitt? I thought it was...
No, it's Brad Pitt's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a while, but I know it was Brad Pitt. We saw a movie a bunch of times. At least I did. Whatchamacallit, in that movie, to quickly explain, Robert Redford's being debriefed about the many... you know, the some of the missions he did with Brad Pitt, who was an upstart CIA agent that was, he was like mentoring, right? And very corny shit about what he's lying about. And, like, you know, cluing the audience in so we could laugh against the other CIA agent. And we're like, they could just check this right now. And it was just so stupid. It's just fucking stupid. And the ending was ridiculous. Like, he's pretending to talk to his wife, but he's really sending an operation. It was just fucking stupid.
Sure.
So, that's stupid. But The Great Unusual Suspect, somewhere in the middle there, that's how it worked for me. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. I think the punchlines on the, you know, you said the taking the breather scenes, you know, where they go back from the... from the spy stuff, from the action stuff in Berlin. She goes back and, you know, some of those cutaways did work. Some of them were worked as punch, as like punchlines, like, you know, like how are they reacting to the sex scene, right?
Right.
But also some of them felt cliche. And then I don't think the joke, the joking lightheartedness of those scenes did anything for me. Until maybe the very end, which is part of a twist, I guess. So, but yeah, it worked okay. But I'm a little conflicted on it. But I want to say, I didn't say my piece. I really enjoyed this movie despite that problem. And, I would see it again for sure. I would say it's more creatively engineered, or like it made me more enthusiastic about the scenes that I was watching unfolding more than John Wick 2 this year. You know, if John Wick the first and this movie came out the same year, I'd be really fighting. I think maybe John Wick was still in that because the simplicity of that story had enough heart that didn't matter. You didn't have to complicate it. Mixed with that action, it would probably be the same. It's funny enough is that one of the coordinators or one of the directors or whatever of John Wick did this movie.
Right.
Atomic Blonde. So, but anyway, I think it's good. And I think I might love that. I like the spy stuff more than the action overall. I mean not to say the action wasn't bad, but what do you think of the plot?
Well, yeah, the main plot was her trying to find this list that her
the knock list,
yeah, that her, which is basically the knock list.
Okay, agencies out there, please tell me no one's actually putting everything on a list and a thumb drive, right? No one's doing that, right? No one, right? Good, there's a guy confirmation.
Well, how did exactly did they ever get to that detail?
No,
right? They
no,
never...
I don't think so. You know what? I saw this. We're reviewing this like 2 weeks after, 3 weeks now since the movie came out.
Yeah,
and I saw it that weekend, I think. So a lot of this is a memory. So I don't think they did. But you saw more recently than I, about a week more recent, right?
Yeah, not by much.
Not by much. Okay. So yeah. Anyway,
I don't remember them.
It's clearly like a MacGuffin. It's the reason for
sure.
This.
Its
contents don't matter.
For sure. Right. Oh, that's what it was.
It
was. They did tell you. Because there was a whole guy behind it. It was basically just think of Mission Impossible, where instead of a machine, it was a guy who memorized everything. Who came?
Well, there was two things. There was a real thing, and then he memorized it also.
Right. Exactly. He had worked. Yeah, well, he made a list like on a thumb drive or something stupid. He had worked for
KGB?
No, MI6.
MI6.
He had worked for MI6, and then the KGB took him or whatever, and then he had the list from both sides or something because he was like privy to all the information or something stupid, and he was trying to get back. If I remember correctly, I forgot how it was.
All right.
Regardless, she's trying to go back from what we seem as an ex-lover. Right?
Yeah, well, remember, we're still not in... we didn't say it's on top, and I didn't even remind you.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah. Well, so that's on the top of the...
We haven't spoiled anything, because that's her mission. She knows what her mission is, and she knows about the guy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but the mission overall was really... what's it called? I think it's she's trying to figure out where the list is, and why haven't we found out more information from our main guy in Berlin. Right?
Right. There's an operative, theoretically an operative station in every major city, you know, from every, government entity out there, which makes sense. And also, it makes sense in our history of spy movies, you know, seemingly a lot of spy movies get that threat, too. They all do it. Jason Bourne has one.
Right.
Every city has a different assassin.
Yeah, know? Jason Bourne is big on that. Yeah,
big on that. Mission Impossible, too, I think, I'm pretty sure. Although they just focus on one team there.
Right, exactly.
So... I like that stuff. And did you, you know, a lot of people found that the plot was convoluted. I think happened was that the trailers and the advertisings and so on made it look like it was going to be what you thought, like a more of a, not that it's like a dumb, but like a dumber action movie extravaganza, and this was like equal parts spy to action, if not more spy than action.
I think the only
people were just surprised.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think the convoluted part was there is a time or two where it takes away from her story, and it kind of focuses on somebody else for a little bit.
Are you talking about the French agent?
Yeah.
There's then another James McAvoy one, right?
Well, correct.
Right.
That kind of fill you in details that lead you to the rest of the story.
Funny thing is, I really like those.
So do I, but what I'm saying is those couple scenes with the story that we're being told, you're kind of like, oh, wait, is this happening or is this in the story, or is this something that we're just filling in?
I just thought it's now, but how did she debrief this part if she wasn't there for it? Hey, right, I just thought of that.
Right, exactly.
She wasn't really there at all? How did she do? I don't remember then.
She did the whole recording thing, didn't she?
Oh, right. Okay. Yep. And she just heard it and, okay. Yeah, exactly. I think you're right.
Right. Well, I guess we saw the part with the French chick. Being by the French chick was helping her out, and then she debriefed her on whatever happened. Mm-hmm. But we saw it happen for real.
Gotcha.
That's more of the one thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
As some of those scenes, though, in between the action scenes, because, again, like you, I thought it was going to be more action, it did seem kind of slow to me.
Well, the pace definitely slowed down, yeah.
Yeah, there were a few times where the pace basically crawls to a turtle pretty fast, the opposite of a car that can go from 0 to 60 or something. So, I mean, I guess those parts maybe just more about the pacing than it is. But even the short moments, though. So I don't really begrudge the movie too much about it. Again, this movie's not perfect, but the spy stuff really worked. And it really wasn't that convoluted. All you got to do is fucking pay attention. Not even all of it. Just pay 50% attention than you usually do in a movie. And you're going to do great. Movie's going to work on you like gangbusters.
Right.
So, because the action scenes are then more explosive because they earn the action more by not being a Fate of the Furious type movie, you know?
Right.
So I think that works for itself, for its credit.
I do enjoy this one thing that the movie, and I think a lot of movies have been doing it lately, where our character feels human and not superhuman.
Yeah. More Hollywood has leaned into the what can realistically happen in an unrealistic scenario.
Sure, right. It's still an unreal or a weird fucking scenario or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it does feel like what can the person
blur in that line more?
Right. It does blur the line a lot more for sure.
Yeah.
And that's super interesting, especially like when they put in like a recovery scene or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are more general questions I can still ask about it without spoilers, but I think we should probably get into it. But we recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it.
Would you we don't have to say what kind of people would recommend. I mean, obviously, if you're over 60, you're not going to
get if you watch James Bond movies, you should watch this.
I think so, yeah. I think that's a good metric. Mm. Any action love or Charlize Theron love? I mean, that's the reason I went to see it.
Sure.
Charlize Theron, I'm like, oh, she's kicking ass, Furiosa. Yes, do something. And she's done a lot of good movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for Atomic Blonde, spoiler free. Let's get into spoilers starting right now.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm impressed. You've got some balls breaking in here.
You should see my balls, then you'd be really impressed.
I'll take your word for it.
She fucking does, yo. No,
she really does.
No, but she takes a fucking beating.
Oh my god, so that hallway scene, they call it more of a hallway sequence, but I'm like, yeah, I guess, but she goes all over the fucking place.
Yeah, she's in an apartment for like a little while.
When she was really tired. And then in the stairs, down floors, and an elevator at some point. I think it starts with an elevator. And then there's like, up to six people on the screen.
Well,
at some point.
It all started off with the car chase, right?
No, it ends with a car chase. Did it start off that way too? They go into her car, and before it goes into that river, and where the dude dies,
really?
That's still all, I mean, not exactly one shot, but it's composited to be one shot.
Oh, yeah. It might have been before they were also in a chase or something.
Right.
Oh, no, they were in a public setting where they were getting shot at.
Oh, yeah, and that's right. And then she ran into the...
Exactly.
It was that umbrella.
Right.
After the umbrella thing, right?
Exactly, yeah.
From the trailers. So, badass scene, right? Is that the scene of the movie, right? And one of the scenes of the year, maybe, for me?
Yeah, I would say so.
I would say it's the best action scene of the year for sure. Right now it is. I don't know what else are we expecting in action. Most action movies already out, been out. That's my point.
Yeah.
By now.
I can't tell, no.
I mean, and two more movies came out, any Spider-Man? No, I think this one beats any Spider-Man movie one. And Guardians of the Galaxy also. Those are more funnier, or tend to be more just pure entertainment as opposed to, like, technical awesome, you know?
Yeah, I would say so.
Right? Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that scene was awesome. What did you think of her using a hose to fight off those guys when she goes up there?
When she first goes to check the apartment of the dead agent, right?
Yeah, or something. That's something. But James McAvoy, what's his name in the movie? I forgot his name.
I'll pull it up. I have it.
Okay. Because I want to stop saying James McAvoy.
David Percival.
Percival. That's right, Percy. Yeah. But you know, it's funny because Percival's weird agenda in the movie, I know we're in spoiler territory already, so he is definitely a traitor of some sort. I'm not 100% what he is, because I guess I did forget some of those details. But he already sends, like, that first time, you know, because when she gets out of the airport, she's immediately attacked by the KGB, which means her cover's already blown. What the hell is the point of her being there? And then it leans into that whole, because the next action sequence after that is the host thing, when she's looking there. And James, Percival, if I remember, he gives her that information, sends her there, and clearly to get killed. Or to be possibly tested. I don't know what.
No, it's the opposite. She tells him, I'm going to go to his apartment to see if I can find anything. And then he's like, you know, that place has been already checked, like, by everybody, right? Like, KGB there and all that stuff.
Oh, okay. Is that how it happened?
Yeah, that's how it happened. And then she's like, yeah, I know, but I'm going to go look into it. I'm going to go look into it, not anybody else, right? And that's basically what she does.
It just seems so clear that he sent them, because he's the only other person that
knows. That's the clear thing afterwards, because she's like, well, this place has already been raided and looted and everything.
Right, well, the whole time after, you know, I always suspected Percival. Like, you know, James McAvoy's done a weird change in his career where he went to start off doing very serious work, and now he's doing these off-the-wall people, and I love him for it. I mean, Split this year also, he's insane.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's literally, you don't know any of his motivations in that movie, because they're all different people in there. The whole time I know he's shady, at least. And I was like, the best case for him is that he just wants to do anything in his power to keep his cushy little, you know, punk life in Germany, even if it means saying fuck you to MI6, right? Maybe that's the best way I can think of him. But at the worst, which is more obvious, is that, you know, he's a giant traitor using the KGB against his own wishes. He's like the Joker for spy people. Like,
sort of.
He just wants to create chaos and have fun with it, you know?
Do you feel that way throughout the whole movie?
I felt that way until more answers were revealed, obviously, because then, you know, oh, okay, it's just money and power, really. And
okay. He wants to
keep his universe intact.
Sure. I would feel the same way. I thought he was a complete and utter, like, a jerk, I think he just wanted to continue what was going on for him. He had an awesome life down there, right? And he was living the life. He was top dog, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of this came into his lap, and he's just like, what the fuck? Like, I have to deal with all this bullshit, right? And that's basically how it felt like. And he was trying to do both at the same time, or conflicted at the same time. Like, he didn't know what he wanted to do. It was like a weird way of testing her. I also felt it was a big test for her. Like, I'm going to throw the KGB at you, like, you know.
Yeah, but also the KGB felt like, you know, they're almost the biggest threat in the movie, but they're also, like, not really. I think they're the biggest pawns. Like, they're just a rabid dog that people keep unleashing on her.
For sure,
because they have, sometimes no one has control on them. They'll just appear at an airport. Right. Other times, like, okay, we'll go there. She'll be there. We'll attack her there.
Exactly.
You know, and then the triple-crossing ideal where she worked for them, but not really. That was cool, that scene at the hotel.
Where she's double-crossing them? Or she's double-crossing...
Well, you know, they only found out... The only reason they were going to kill her and found out about her identity is because James McAvoy figured it out. That she had to be double-crossing MI6 because of her actions and her knowledge, I guess, or, right? Am I wrong in that? What was that that traitor they were looking for in the background? Had a weird code name to him.
Oh, yeah, the code name. I forgot what the code name was, but, yeah. And that was her name in the KGB, right?
Something like that, yeah, right. I think so. At first, I thought it was him. I might still get this wrong, this is not boding well to us saying that the plot isn't convoluted. It wasn't when I saw it, but again, we're reviewing this really late. Again, sorry. We usually don't really read movies this late, but, you know, this is the vacation threw us all off, and we're catching up to a lot of movies.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can't remember her, the code name, but yeah.
It's okay. Let's call it Jackal. Code name Jackal. Yeah. So that was really cool, and that's what made sense of that scene, and it made, and now I'm not really, it felt a little weird that she was, it's funny because she was being fake debriefed by MI6 because she's not really allegiance to them, but the American CIA was there, so she was really being debriefed by the American, you know, her actual boss. And this became a Jane Bond overseas in USA.
Yeah. The one thing that actually felt really weird was, she, and actually kind of a call that's telling you that there's something fishy going on, is that she had her own team. She had her own people. She had her own connections. And it's not thing yeah. huge bad thing for a spy to have their own connections on top of whatever.
It's like a detective having snitches and shit.
Right. And she had mentioned before, I think, that she went to Berlin once, I think, or something.
I think it's like once or like a long time ago, something like that.
Right. When she started. So I guess it wasn't a whole run the stretch for her to know somebody there.
Yeah.
But it felt like the person that she met was like a person she just met. That her connection,
yeah,
it was like a friend of a friend, the connection kind of
maybe
thing.
From that other operative that got killed that she fucked. What do you think of that, by the way?
Yeah, I don't know what I thought.
I felt very shoestringed in because I don't think we needed that whole like they had sex before thing.
I think it was that was more of a there for us, the viewers, and not for
like to form a connection or a reason why she would go through all this.
No, it was more like she's gonna take things more personally than what's it called? Then
I think that would work better on a sequel. That's funny.
Yeah, maybe, but I think it was more like it's more of a personal thing that she takes right this mission for, and at the same time, it kind of she can use it as like, oh well, I'm trying to hide this because it's a no-no in the government or whatever. Yeah. So she's being secretive.
CIA interpersonal relationships is still a no-no.
Right, she's being secretive.
Yeah,
for that reason and not because of another reason. Mm. So they throw that as a monkey wrench in there.
Maybe. I just think that like if they want to make a sequel, which I heard that they kind of want to, and I'm down for that. Also based on a comic book, which I've never heard of. A lot of these movies are kind of done that.
From my understanding, it's a manga, I think, right?
Oh, shit, is it, Billy?
I think it's a manga.
I don't know. I just know some comic book something.
Well, it said at the very end, it was like by the graphic novel or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but the company, it was a Japanese company.
Oh, shit.
So they might have delved into English a while back, and it was maybe
I mean, they do that. Gunslinger Girl, for example, they're all in Germany.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they have Japanese faces.
And sure, of course,
whatever,
right.
But otherwise. Maybe. I feel like the plot of that love angle, the making it now this time is personal, is to have a second movie to say this time is personal. Like, you know, to start off the movie, the first movie of a potential franchise that way. Maybe, at first I thought that was too cool, but you know, maybe it's more of a monkey wrench type deal.
Yeah.
A red herring for the audience.
I saw it as a red herring for the audience.
Seeming, it's not red herring necessarily, but having us think that it's this motivation when it's really another, or more of a business-like motivation.
Sure.
So what do you think of James McAvoy's acting?
I mean, it's kind of bonkers. He's like, he plays this kind of Green Street hooligan kind of person where he's too
nice,
super punk.
Nice callback.
Nice pull there, right?
Pull there, yeah. Callback. There's no callback to it, no.
It's just
I mean, to our lives, yeah.
For our lives, completely, but...
I think Luke forced us to watch that movie.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think this is like, he's got this weird kind of like anti-Nazi punk. What's it called? I don't know. Who's like, who just wants to party? And I don't know what his reasoning is there for. He almost feels like, why? How did you get into MI6? Like,
right?
Thing, right?
I'm curious to see his straight lace version.
Right? Exactly. Like
what?
He's obviously really smart.
Out?
Right? He's obviously really smart, and
he's,
we see that.
He's
like,
he's pretty devious.
Yeah, right,
he feels
exactly.
like a devil.
Yeah.
Like he's the devil on everyone's shoulder.
Yeah.
That you should not be listening to, but he's so convincing.
Right, and he doesn't know what he wants to play, and I think that's the weird thing. In this,
I think he just fell in with the punk movement in there.
Sure,
like okay, I'll just stick here.
Well, actually, that's what what Charlize Theron's character brings up, right?
Yeah,
is that she's like, yeah, he looked like a guy who, and they even brought it up. I think like we think that he's kind of just likes the movement that he's in or the position he's in.
Yeah, he doesn't want to leave
his post,
his universe.
Right? Yeah, I mean,
He's cushy. He's the king of that universe.
His apartment's full of like contraband that he eventually sells when he wants money. Or
right, exactly. What was cool about that is that he's got the cops on his pocket. He's got the KGB in his pocket also with all the other operatives.
It's amazing.
He runs that town.
He runs an operation full of people that could easily kill him.
Easily, right?
Right.
But he's got enough information and enough pull to like always get away from things, or at the same time, I don't know, like just dissuade people from killing him.
Do you feel that when his death does come in that street? First of all, that came on a weird decision because I almost feel like if he... Well, not feel. I know. If he instead chose to ran right away, you know, when he burns his place down before he goes to kill the French operative?
Yeah.
I forgot her name too. Sorry, everybody. If he just runs away, doesn't kill her, he doesn't die.
True.
Because moments after her death, you know, he strangles her in her apartment.
Delphine LaSalle.
Thank you. I'm not going to remember that. I'm just going to say French Harbor.
Just LaSalle.
LaSalle. Oh, yeah. The street.
Yeah.
We're in Chi-Town, boys.
It's LaSalle.
LaSalle. You know, and then Atomic Blonde. Jesus. Charlize Theron's character wouldn't have gone there in time and seen him. And,
sure.
And then chased him. So that's a little kind of funny. Kind of like a... you know, in Heat, if he doesn't go back for revenge,
yeah,
you know, he makes it out.
That's literally the whole movie right there. Like that scene right. In Heat is like,
yeah.
Is like
he just like, can't let go.
Just don't go. He just can't let it go. Don't
well, that
go.
Movie really plays that scene harder. Like it really makes us live with that decision more than this movie.
For sure.
Because James McAvoy is clearly the anti-hero. Or not even a hero at all. He's a villain. So it's a different feel.
Right. Well, what's funny is that he, in the end, when he gets all the information and he knows that Charlize Theron is the traitor in this list, right? What's called? That basically that's what the list is for because they were like, the traitor is known who's on there, who we've been trying to figure out or whatever, that infiltrated MI6 that works for KGB.
Mm-hmm.
What's called? When she figures it out, it's like now he wants to do it for queen and country, you know? Like now he wants to be the guy who's like, hey, like I'm doing my part, right? And this is what I was put here for. And he kind of like wants to finally do that, redeem himself, you know, even though it would mean him leaving or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But he kind of fucks himself. It was cool, though, that he planted that bug on her. From the get-go.
Oh, my God. That was good.
Beautiful. That was a beautiful bug.
That was a beautiful bug. You know, that was really cool. And I love when she finally discovered it.
Right.
It was a good scene. That scene was...
That was a clear moment of panic for her.
That was, right. And she's so steely resolve, and her atomic blonde hair really makes her that image in your head. Like, she's the cold fish that will never let anything
exactly,
go or whatever
yeah.
and kill everyone without resolve.
Right.
And I really love that scene. It might be my favorite scene of the movie, despite the action awesomeness of that hallway sequence.
Yeah.
It's
a really pivotal scene for sure because she's got to keep calm, collected, and everything.
And
all
now
the time.
We bring it around to the main actor, and then Charlize Theron kills it in this movie.
She really does. She does a good job. I mean, she's showing that she can do just about anything.
Yeah, Imperiosa, you know, showed us a lot. Her persona did increase in value in everyone's perceptions because that movie was seen by everyone, and obviously we don't see her in action. A lot of older people are doing a lot of action movies. I mean, who's that other guy who's doing another? He's doing action movies now. It's not Mel Gibson. I know he's been doing that a little bit. I know he started that, I'm saying there's another guy.
You mean he's still doing that?
Yeah, he's still doing it. That's what I should have said. Doesn't matter. This is an older guy. But Colin Firth, for example, was one with the Kingsman series.
Right.
Suddenly he's
an
now,
interesting one,
right,
too.
That's weird. You know, and obviously Liam Neeson, of course.
Yeah.
So it's super interesting, and I love that it's working out for most of them, and it's working out for her and Liam Neeson the most.
Yeah.
They're my top two. Older people going into action for the first time.
Oh, well, what's his name is about to jump him back into that fucking train,
who?
Which is Jackie Chan.
Right. Oh, my God, that trailer looks badass. I hope that movie works out.
Yeah. Dude, it looks creepy. I saw a trailer recently.
Yeah.
He looks like a fucking creepy ass character.
I've only seen it once. I don't remember anymore.
Well, I just saw it recently.
I think I might have seen it for the Atomic Blonde.
Think of Collateral Damage, the movie. Not a great movie. But the same plot.
Yeah.
And
that plot would not work today.
Never. but this is like, he's ex-whatever China.
Yeah.
Right? And then... He's trying to figure out like who did it, and he's just like, "Give me a name so I can kill him." Basically, like this, what he wants from.
And Jackie Chan never kills in his movies,
huh?
Jackie Chan never really kills in his movies.
No, he really
in
doesn't.
His older movies.
He avoids every like at all costs to kill people.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Which is a really funny thing.
And most he'll break your bones, but it'll be funny.
Right,
because he'll use like a.
In reality, he broke his bone doing that stunt.
Right, he'll use like a marker. I don't know what.
Right, yeah.
A plank.
He goes completely out of his way to make sure you don't die. You're in a lot of fucking pain. To go, you don't die, but you lived. Like, he could have killed you easily.
Yeah. I mean, okay, we're talking about different movies. Charlize Theron knocks it out, though. I mean, whatever choreography worked out for her, whatever stunt double that worked out really well, worked for her.
Did you think that...
the way she was getting so tired by the end of the hallway.
She was so tired, yeah. Oh, well, it's the movie starts off with her getting out of a ice bath, right?
Oh, yeah, because she's about to be debriefed, and she's all those scars and bruises that she's had over in Berlin.
And she takes, like, a long time to, like, make up herself and stuff. And,
Because
she's fucked up. Yeah, and you can tell, like, a lot of it's not only from the mission that
you know,
happened.
It's funny, because I think inherently it brings out this image of a woman being battered, but she is the battering. She's the survivor. Like, it's a completely opposite dynamic
than
people are used to when they see a woman with bruises on.
Right, exactly. Well, what's interesting really cool is that she's the battering ram, and that's just the dents on the battering ram.
Right.
Right, yeah, like, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Right. It's really cool. It's a nice reversal.
It really is. Well, like I said,
on Hollywood culture.
Sure.
Movies like this.
You can tell what's still kind of fresh in comparison to what's old on her body. Some scars. You're like, okay, like, that looks like it's been there for a while. That's completely healed. Mm-hmm. That's there, right? Those bruises obviously look fresh as fuck. Like, anything purple on her is just like, yup. Like, that makes
and
sense.
And the more realistic they make the unrealistic action, the more you feel for that awesome play. You know, so good. Last question, big one. What do you think of the set here? I mean, I probably it's because it's based on the manga. It's set in East Berlin and West Berlin or whatever in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's probably that's the reason. But let's say if it was original, what would you think of the period setting of this movie? Like, why this setting?
It's actually pretty interesting time because a lot of Cold War stuff we don't really deal with. We only dealt with it in spy movies, which makes sense because it's a big spy time, right? But it's cool to kind of put yourself, especially in a place where it's not just about getting out, because I feel like Berlin during Cold War, it's a lot about, are you getting in or are you getting out from whichever East Berlin or whatever. So all the movies that we've seen or anything that you usually watch entertainment value-wise, it's usually either very historic or very in and out kind of
things. It seems like every year or two. It's been every year.
We get something about it.
We get something about exactly Berlin during that time.
Right, exactly. And what we get here in this one is something, obviously, that didn't happen or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah. Its own, like, entertainment thing in a city that, in the end, it didn't matter what city they were in, but it added a little bit more threat because of that city, because of where it was. And it was just a cool scene to do this crazy, the craziness going on in Berlin. Yeah. It was like, you know, it felt like it could have been filmed in, I don't know, in England or in London or in Paris because of the crazy, like, punk movement. But it was kind of perfect where it was.
What do you think? I mean, Bridge of Spies and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. are two others I can think of most recent.
Yeah.
And Atomic Blonde, which is your favorite. They're all three different very much.
What about the one where they escape with the...
Is that Brad Pitt, Marie Antoinette,
Marie
Antoinette.
Or the one where they escape from with, They make a what's it called? A flotation device with a bunch of things? Or maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
My bad.
I might be thinking of a show, Mythbusters or something.
Oh, sure.
I have a lot of things
I've never
in my
seen
head.
Mythbusters. Okay, well, I'm just curious. Yeah, there's a lot of them recently. It's funny. Well, soundtrack. Overloading, Over to Burying. I mean, a lot of 80s tracks for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Love Balloons two or three times.
Yeah.
I think
in two different
languages.
A
little too much.
You think so?
One English, one German. It was originally a German song.
You know, it is original.
Which is why they picked it.
Exactly.
It's just a little too easy. That's like a high schooler would choose that music.
Yeah, I get it. I also feel like it wasn't as necessarily a music battled kind of thing or whatever, kind of like how, Guardians of the Galaxy is, where they, you know, the movie revolves around its music, right?
I guess you're right.
It doesn't, but it does feel that way a little bit.
Yeah, it does feel heavy.
And I feel that that's like a kind of a theme going on lately also, where they use a lot of music wherever they're in, and 80s is a big thing, obviously. I'm always fine with music from the 80s.
I mean, that's why they made Ready Player One, right?
Sure, mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's just everything. Like,
I know, that's more
80s and on.
Well, that's more 80s-ish than this movie.
Sure, yeah. Big love for that. But and not to show Big Love, but I think poor Bill Paxton. Yeah. No, not poor Bill Paxton. My nigga has so many wives.
They're all hot.
Yeah. What's it called? He had a no. What was I saying about the music? I don't mind the 80s music, but it does feel hammy I would agree with you there.
Yeah.
It does feel like if I had to
love
pick
the graphics, though.
If I had to pick the collection of music, obviously Loof Balloons would have been there.
Right.
But I would have picked maybe some other stuff like club music during the time. So I mean it made sense, and they kind of try to pick it to where it fit the what's it called? It fit the time where they're supposed to be in, yeah, what they're listening to. But I did like the fact that a lot of it was in German, if you paid attention to any of the music.
Yeah, yeah.
Some stuff was obviously English. You can't get away from that.
Right.
But, yeah.
I think they had Take On Me at some point.
I think so, yeah.
What, am I wrong on that?
Was that Aha?
Maybe I just heard it recently.
I hear it every other day, so yeah.
Yeah, so so Atomic had this thing where they make GIFs or whatever. GIFs?
Oh, GIFs, yeah.
Yeah, and I did a bunch with different names and shit. And I think, so if you go to, I forgot the website, but just look for Atomic Blonde GIF or something, and they create your own, and, you know, it's like a sponsoring advertising thing about the continual effort against Trump's and the versions of women, and the rallying, I'm sorry, I don't remember all these names of organizations and shit, but whatever it went through that. It went to the rights and shit to help those people out, fight against all this shit that's going on.
Right.
So every time you did it, you're kind of supporting them a little bit. So I did a bunch of those, so it was kind of a cool advertising technique they did for Atomic Blonde on Twitter, or through Twitter. And
yeah,
it was pretty cool. Anyway, anything else on Atomic Blonde?
No, I mean, for me, it's a huge EA to watch. Definitely a cool movie, watching experience in the theater.
I totally dig it. I want to buy it.
Right. And if you just like those type of movies or action-y spy things where there's an actual plot, just not just a random action like I'm trying to save my daughter, that's the way I say it. It's not a Taken movie. It's where it's just super to the point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's fun, man. You should definitely watch it.
Yeah.
It's still in theaters now, so yeah.
Right, exactly. I agree with everything Ralph said, and we're going to call that an end for this review. When we come back, after this break, short break, clip here, we're going to review our second film of the day, which is The Dark Tower. Stay with us.
The tower is all that stands between light and darkness. For thousands of generations, the gunslingers were knights sworn to protect it. Now I'm the only one left. The tower will fall. Get used to the carnage. Now the war has come to Earth. You really think you can stop me, Gunslinger?
Come on!
The last Gunslinger, Roland, has been locked in an eternal battle with Walter, also known as the Man in Black, determined to prevent him from toppling the Dark Tower, which holds the universe together, our universe. With the fate of the worlds at stake, good and evil will collide in an ultimate battle, as only Roland can defend the tower from the Men in Black. This is Men in Black 3, you know.
Now you know, they always call me the Man in Black. Well, sure. You'll never see bright colors.
There's on my back. Yeah. Right. Anyways, this is starring Idris Elba, Matthew McConaughey, Tom Taylor, cool kid, and
not a bad actor.
Yeah,
considering with that powerhouse of those two.
And let's just call it that because everybody else is a second character.
Yeah, it's really second. Maybe the mom is next, but she's like five scenes at most.
Yeah, maybe the mom and yeah, I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah. All right, The Dark Tower. Heavy novel. Heavy novel is what I'm saying. Heavy movie.
Stephen King's year for
heavy adaptation.
The box office, I think.
Jesus, right. There's another one, I think, too.
Is it three?
But there's always like, what's the third?
I think there's three this year. If not, he's got a TV show. He's always got a TV show.
Under the Dome, no, that's canceled. yeah, no, that guy.
No, aren't they redoing Pet Sematary?
This year, are they redoing it?
If not, it's next year.
That's a hard movie to outsell because that movie's pretty good.
I think they're redoing it.
The original, have you seen it?
No, I've never seen it.
Shit, you should watch it. It really holds up.
Yeah.
It's still like the effects were perfect. It's like the thing version of, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be hard to top that movie out. But you can top it out because it, even though some
it's
of
a TV
was,
movie.
It's a TV movie and it's way too long.
It's way too fucking long. It's two movies.
It's like, it is two movies, essentially.
Like,
one,
I saw that
one with
movie.
Their kids and one
with I saw it and I should have watched Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, exactly. You should be watching it.
Right, exactly.
Wow, that movie's amazing.
Anyways,
I have
Dark
the box
Tower.
Right there. Dark Tower. Right. This tower that's slightly darker than most other towers.
Right. It looks cool.
How, wh- How is the elevator in that place?
Lack of. It's total stairs.
Janitorial staff. That's total be, like, stairs. Insane. Like a whole city population worth.
Right. The
janitorial
There's staff. Only one way in. And it's just, yeah, you can't even get by helicopter.
What do you think of, before we really get into it, I mean, the Dark Tower is a gigantic...
Tower.
Book series. Raphael, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be here all night. Book series. The steak is great. No, not a book series. It's like a gigantic, it's like, you know, some of these movies have this, usually fantasy movies. Like, you think of The One Ring and Mount... Doom or Mordor? Mordor, right? Mm-hmm. Fuck.
Yeah. Mikey. As long as you didn't say Olympus, we're good.
Well, I mean, that isn't quite the deal because that's just evil. Like, if you destroy Mount Doom, Mount Mordor, whatever the fuck,
yeah.
It doesn't, like, the world doesn't implode or universes don't implode. But sometimes there are these little connections where, like, all of everything revolves on this one thing. Mm-hmm. As far as those plots go, and I'm sorry for not giving you a better analogy, how do you think this one goes as far as a Dark Tower? Like, how does it feel that it is a Dark Tower and that it is holding either the universe or at least this galaxy?
Well, it's interesting. It's like a big force field generator. Right. That's the way I saw it. It's like for our universe, right?
Did it feel like the diagram a little bit for a deep cut here, folks, for the Sword of Truth novels? You know how they describe their version of a pentagram, where they describe how the magic works and the light and the dark side, and mm-hmm. then the veil, right?
Yeah.
And how it's all revolved on one, kind of not one thing exactly, but essentially Richard.
You know, at the moment, yeah.
At that moment, for his lifetime. He's the most important thing.
He is the most important thing, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Kind of felt a little like that for me.
A little bit, yeah. This is... I guess the stakes are a lot higher in this one with this tower.
I would say so.
You could totally do a lot more also because it's a universe with different dimensions in there, I guess, and shit. There's a lot of shit going on, and this this tower stands in the middle.
I think the biggest question on adaptation, especially in this case where I read not all the books, I'm halfway through them, and you haven't read any of them. Did you feel like this movie was enough for you, or did you feel like, oh man, I should have, like, I wish I knew more from the books? Not necessarily read them. I mean, I'm not saying that the movie convinced you to read books. I'm saying, did you feel like you missed out watching this movie?
So a little bit. I feel like there's definitely a lot of in-betweens that I missed out in. Mm. And I don't know what. I'm a big background, behind-the-scenes kind of thing. So I like to know what's going on in the rest of the... you mentioned a universe, and you're mentioning this, and you're mentioning that. And, like, this is the same problem I had with... what's that movie we saw that we reviewed also? The...
Atomic Bomb?
No. The one from last one. The whatever... With Japanese all the movies. With all the...
Paprika?
No. Oh, my God. The one with the cool sci-fi movie that we saw.
Oh, Valerian?
Valerian, right? It's kind of like that, where they do a lot of world building and a lot of non-explanation. And I was like, yeah, I want to know everything. I'd be cool to know everything.
I see your point. But see, in that movie, I was more fascinated with how they were doing it rather than, like, where it's from. In the Dark Tower...
the Dark Tower, I would like to see more explanation between the Man in Black and the Gunslingers, for example.
Right.
That would be awesome, that I totally know I'm missing out on.
Right, it's like the coolest things about this movie is that it's the stuff that they'll literally need another 2 hours to explain because of what you can only imagine, even only me be reading half the book so far, is a much enrichment history, right. A rich history of exactly. Shit going on, you know. And I would say, for the book, for the most part, take place through the Gunslinger's perspective.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Which makes sense. And obviously it's much more expansive, and you see a lot of his training and his history, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, they had to simplify that shit a lot. And I should say also, the Dark Tower is famed for having a troubled production. It was supposed to come out at least like 2 years ago. It was supposed to come out last year at some point.
Oh, really?
It was supposed to come out like at two earlier times this year.
What was the problem?
They didn't say. At some point, they did say that they had to do some, not reshoots, but I think cuts or recuts, or maybe did reshoots at first time, and then now recuts or re-edits or whatever. And they had to simplify the story at some point. They came out. People were so worried about it. They had to come out and say, I think a month before its release, they had to come out and say that this is not an adaptation of the novels. It is a sequel to the novels. And only book readers would understand what that means. I got spoiled on it, so I do know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to spoil 12 books right now for you.
Sure.
So, But now hearing that and seeing this, and it makes sense. And if you want, I'll tell you off air. And it is an interesting way to make a movie for the first-time viewers out there, because most of them would be first-time viewers, not readers. It's funny how they made it this way, and like that kind of makes sense. And I really like that idea. And I think now that to actually review the movie, I would say it overall really worked for me overall, and I give it a good, like, you know, 3 out of 5 stars or something. Like, you know, it's like more than mediocre, not great, but it was pretty good. What do you think?
Overall, it was pretty good. Yeah, I didn't hate it. I don't know where I would put
it. It's like the Two Towers.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Right. It's not as great as the first one. Not as epically awesome as the third one. It's pretty good. Solid middle there, right?
Right.
To reference back Mount Mordor.
Mm-hmm.
I just definitely the audience. Anyway,
that's okay.
I liked it. What do you want to talk about? The fantasy element, the sci-fi element, because it's kind of both in there. The actors, Jake. Jake is really the main actor.
Oh, yeah, we spend most of our time with Jake.
Yeah,
I think just about every time there is, except for I think maybe 2-3 scenes.
Oh no, we see it. Well, we cut away to Walter doing a lot of shenanigans.
Sure, but what I'm saying is like all our main scenes are with him, except for like 2 or 3 ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can start with Jake. Yeah. I guess.
I think the good thing about him, and it's also the bad thing, is that the movie clearly wants, and this movies do this a lot, this trick a lot, usually in one scene though, not for whole entire movies, but they would introduce someone that's psychic material at best to get us into an introduction to this world we're about to visit. And the whole idea is that we get to discover the world like he does, so he'll get to ask the questions. He'll get to discover things for the first time, like what is a veil? What is the thinnies? What is the gunslinger? You know, although he knows what that is. You know, so it's a good way to do that, but also, like, you know that in this case, the movie really wanted to show Walter and Roland more, which I understand, they're more interesting. But they know better than to start a movie with them or make them their main characters, necessarily, even though they are.
Yeah.
But I think they stray away from them. The reason they have a lot of callaways to Walter and a lot of, like, POVs, but they, you know, the rare times when Jake is away from Roland, they tend to focus on Roland more. Because that's who the story they want. It's like they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those scenes didn't work for it in its favor. But overall, it worked for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first half of the movie is definitely heavy. What's it called? For the kid, right? For Jake. And then, and that's actually pretty cool because you kind of get a hint of, like, what is he connected to? Like, and that question definitely arises. Like, what does he have or what is he this or why him? Is it something just something weird that he's
and
chosen?
Apparently he has the super shining.
Right. Go figure, because he can use the shining because, you know.
Is that a spoiler? Did we just spoil something? I mean, he's special. We know from the beginning.
That's a little bit of a spoiler.
And no one really explains.
Well, they mentioned Shining in the beginning, I guess.
Oh, yeah, when you first discovered that weird lab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, it's kind of hard to spoil and not spoil this thing. Okay, anyway, continue.
Right. But, yeah, I think this character, following it through Jake's perspective, it makes sense in the beginning because you get, like you said, you get to ask those questions and get through it. But you do definitely feel that the movie doesn't want to follow Roland a lot and then just show you Men in Black stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. But yeah, going through Jake's perspective, I thought it was cool because and it's a very typical trope thing to do also in a sci-fi / fantasy where no one believes a kid because, you know, we're set in our ways. And
what do you think of the psychologist scene?
The one where he actually sees a psychologist?
Yeah, it's the only one scene, yeah.
Right. Oh, sorry, I was thinking about the other scene where they meet the
group. Oh, the fake, the Looney Bin people.
Right, the Looney Bin people, right.
That's the proper name.
Proper.
We know so much. Yeah. The short bus specials. That's terrible. I'm going to hell.
Horrible. What did I think of it? I don't know. I thought it was, he made sense. Like, he's trying to figure out through his perspective also, right? And it does make sense because he brings up everything that would tie into it when you see it, but at the same time, you know, you're supposed to indulge a kid at the same time. And it's, I don't know, I felt very tropish, I guess.
I guess so. I think
you liked it more than anything?
No, I barely remember the scene. I just remember thinking that it was a good enough scene, very cliche, of course, but good enough because it also exemplified more of this tremors, these earthquakes, when New York is not known for, by the way.
New York does not have that.
If it was in L.A., that would be a terrible choice to put them in. But like if this was like New York, I think the fact that they're having these tremors goes hand in hand with the with this violence that's happening to the universe and that it must be stopped. Yeah, I really like that. I really liked his journey overall because here's one thing that's that I feel like that I got from the books, and I'm sorry to do this snobbery book thing, that the movie didn't really picture very well. They tried their best, and that is to put to instill Jake with this sense of providence that he's like in a way like once he finds out what the portals are and the Midworld is and the Dark Tower and its importance, like for real importance, not just like I have it in dreams. Like once he finds that out, in the books they describe it much better in how he's able to go with it. Mm-hmm. And like lean into his fate, bad or good, and his place into saving or helping Roland / the Dark Tower. They try their best in this one because they have to wash away with a lot of, Mister, I want to go home, or you know, he's a kid, he should be crying more or whatever, you know, and he's not, and they're trying to show him that he's accepting something that he is meant to be going to.
Yeah.
Something that he's meant to do.
The universe is clearly playing a role for him, or right. giving him a role.
Right, a role that he's accepting.
Yeah.
And he accepted way faster than we would ever think because it is providence, and it is.
Right.
It does require courage that Jake does have. Mm. But it's hard. The movie doesn't show that quite well, in my
opinion.
No,
it doesn't, but it does show that he wants to. He knows he belongs somewhere, and he knows the reason he's getting all of this information, which is the Men in Black, the Dark Tower, and Roland, the gunslinger. He knows that he's getting a lot of the snippets of all this crazy stuff going on, right? That he knows that something, like, he's getting these for a reason, and he's trying to long for that. But I think after that, they don't do enough to justify that he fits in this world, or this universe, should I say. We say world, but it's a lot bigger than that.
It's funny, because his introduction to the Midworld and Roland is what causes a lot of problems. We won't spoil how that works exactly. It's not too spoiler, but it does take a while to get there, so I'm not going to spoil that little answer.
Sure.
But real quick, what do you think of Roland, and then we'll talk about the Men in Black. Roland himself, Idris Elba, how do you think he did?
I think it was cool. I think it wasn't horrible.
Kind of Luther-y. Like, I feel like they hired him because of Luther, but Luther is way better. Cause, oh my God, I love that character. Jesus, is so good. I mean, we watched the show entirely, which is very short. It's like 8 episodes total. It's like 5 seasons. Because every season is like 2 episodes.
So right,
it's
exactly.
It's a weird show.
Fucking BBC.
BBC is weird.
BBC is
come on, dude.
Weird.
Make more episodes. It's so hard.
Right.
Anyway, what do you think of him?
Yeah, no, I mean, he was fine. I didn't have any big problems
with him. Not his best, but not his worst.
Right, I mean, he plays, the sad thing is that the role is very tropish again. And it's tropish because we've seen it so many times, right?
The funny thing is that, I'm trying not to be this guy, but he is insanely much more cool and complicated in the books. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, what I'm saying, he's in the point of, like, you could tell he's got other things to him, right?
Yeah.
But like in the point of this, when the movie is, he feels like, oh, like he's still struggling with the death of his father.
Right. He's an engine for revenge.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's a one man, a one mission kind of guy,
sure.
And unfortunately, they had to forego any nuance on the character in order to do that. Here's one thing that they had to convince today, because the movie has to do it. And again, I'm not spoiling anything by, you know, talking about this particular point for those out there who's still listening and in a spoiler-free setting. It's not a spoiler, but it's also very obvious that they have to do this. Did Idris Elba / the movie convince you that Roland fell in love, obviously that's stupid, but it had a bond with the boy?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you convinced of that bond?
Of course. There was a bond. Okay. I would say...
when they go to that town?
No, a little bit after that.
A little bit after that, okay.
Yeah. I think the bond was definitely there where you think the bond shouldn't be, I guess.
Okay,
towards the
I'm
end.
With you. Yeah,
there
right.
you go.
Okay, yeah. So yours came pretty late. Mine came around the town area.
Yeah, I mean, I knew they were hinting at it, but I didn't feel
that
there was
that cute Oracle seer. She was so cute.
Yeah, so cute. She's in something. She's in another show or something.
I feel like she was in... she married Robb Stark in Game of Thrones. Isn't that her?
I don't know, maybe.
Oh, maybe. I'm probably fucking
it up. Pretty sure you're fucking that up, yeah.
Pretty sure. Anyway, she was yummy, and I want to date her.
Okay.
Call me. So, yeah. Or the Man in Black, then. I figure Roland's pretty much simple to figure out.
The Men in Black is interesting. They don't really bring up much more than he's like a sorcerer kind of thing.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, they just don't bring up exactly what he can do. They show some of the stuff that he can do, but they never actually explain his limits or not his limits. But what
that's the biggest problem about this movie is that he is the most like, annoying parts of magic. Like he can just do magic. His answer is magic. His answer is everything.
He's powerful enough,
and
to
he has no limits.
Right. I guess the way they see the way they put it in the movie's perspective, where they mention a seer, which is like kind of this telepathic kind of thing, right? He's that on crack. So like he can convince you to do things.
Right. Right. One of the greatest things is that he's also feels like the cosmic version of the Joker. Like you feel like he just wants to fuck with everyone.
Sure. Yeah.
Like when he goes to. at some point, okay, where you go? Okay, I'm not gonna say that. But at some point, he does like meet someone offhandedly when he's finding information that leads eventually to Roland and Jake, and in his mission to take them. Maybe I'm not gonna spoil that. It's like he'll get the information from this nobody or nobody's person next to him, and he'll just fuck with them right then and there. He'll kill them for no reason, sleep to death, or what he said. I don't remember. He had that one line he said twice or three times, like
"Stop breathing."
Stop breathing. That's it. And he's just obviously there. And I'm like, "Fuck you, man." Yeah. And then I feel like he has no limits for sure.
Yeah, they kind of the way I saw him after the movie and. During-ish kind of movie, he's a guy, he's a sorcerer kind of thing, right? Where he's basically perfected his craft. And he's at his highest limits. He's reached level 100, and if you want to look at it, right? In video game aspect, he knows how to play he knows how to play all these things. So he knows how to do everything. So for him, it's easy coming to get somebody, right? Mm-hmm. He can just easily do something because he's like, think of it Harry Potter's way where everyone still has to say spells, but all the adults and everybody else already know they don't have to say the spell. They don't have to, say the spell. They just have to do it, right? They just have to do the fucking move, and you're good.
And have conviction.
Exactly. Right. And that's basically who he is in this. And he's just like, you're the guy who doesn't know anything. And there's only one of me. Like, I'm top dog when it comes to everything else. Like, and I get to tell you, stop breathing. And
he has his own cult.
Yeah.
You know? And Harry Potter, what do you think about, in the first movie or two, they actually give you, they spend the time to do the wrist movements of the spells, and then by the seventh movie they forego. I mean, by then, not just like at that point, but by all that time, all the spells are all the same, pointing in the same way.
Yeah,
they just fucking most fuck that. They like just like fuck that shit. Now we're not gonna do the flicks anymore. Right. I mean, that's important. Fuck those people.
I do agree. Yeah,
sorry, a little hang up.
Well, I think a lot of the moves are just whatever.
Yeah, no,
it's a lot of intent.
I'm just saying you should start it with the whatever.
Sure, I agree.
Yeah, anyway.
We're not into spoilers because I think we're basically encroaching it.
Yeah, we're encroaching it now. Yeah, we definitely. Oh my god, we talk way more than I thought we would. Jesus, we're fucking blowhards.
Yeah.
We're like old men. We're going to talk the ears off of people when we go to the old retirement home. It's not going to be a retirement home for us. Anyway, spoilers starting now.
For thousands of generations, the gunslingers were knights. Sworn to protect us from the coming of the dark.
These visions, as you call them.
What do you see?
I see a tower.
The man in black.
And the gunslinger.
They're just dreams. They're not real, Jake.
There's another world out there.
I know there is.
So you mean my kid won't want me to live with him?
No, he won't.
He's a tough shit kid. You better leave that basement for me.
Yeah, right.
Or the garage.
So here's the problem with the power. So the man in black.
With the man in black, yeah.
Okay. Obviously, the main problem is that no limits are clearly shown on him.
Yeah.
Like, that's some of the problems that Game of Thrones is having. Well, and some of the stuff, we get a clear-cut picture of what it is and what they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
But like Bran, like, it's becoming weird, and we still don't know anything about these... You know, ice people, whatever. I feel like it's too little too late at this point. But whatever. The same thing with here. They don't explain anything. But the only thing they show for real is that Roland's immune to his influence. And while they don't have to explain why, it seems clear that the answer is what he should have known the whole time, Walter, I mean, that it's destiny. It's providence. He's the one that's going to stop you. And that's why he has the power to do it. That's not in the books at all. I don't think that's the real reason, but that's the best way the movie showed it to me.
Yeah.
And that's not a good reason to have your protagonist and antagonist go against each other.
But
just because they're meant to go against each other?
Right, exactly.
What a bullshit cop-out answer is that?
Right, and then also there's a big problem where... Why, and it's a big villain trope-ish thing where, like, the James Bond kind of thing, like, mm-hmm. I don't have to kill you, Mr. Bond, because I told you all my plans or whatever, and then it backfires on him, right? It's kind of the same thing where he's like, he has all the opportunity in the world to kill Roland many times over, like, for whatever reason, and he just chooses not to because he likes to play
That's funny.
He likes to play with his prey or something. And he likes the fact that...
Like a cat playing with a mouse before. Right.
I think he likes the fact that there is somebody out there in the universe.
I do think so, too. I think there is a little of that.
They hint at...
Tiny bit. I think all Matthew McConaughey's weird performance.
Yeah. They hint at it a little bit where he's like... the one hint was with that bullet because he saves the bullet. What's it called? That Roland shot at him after his death.
Yeah, that's right.
Part is that you could tell like... He's like, see, I like you for this reason because you're like my anti thing. You know,
I wish I know, and I know, and if he is really truly the universe's version of the Joker, that makes sense.
Yeah.
He would want to keep Batman around / Roland around.
Same with Batman; he wants to keep the Joker around.
Well, no, I think that's not that ideal, but. I think there's a little of that. There's another reason I had before you said that reason, which is actually better than mine, I think. But I was thinking about it like a Death Wish scenario or something. Like, because I just think no answer was really given in the movie as to why this happened or why Walter would let him live so long. At first, here's the reason I was thinking of. He's a little afraid. Like, he's a little afraid to encounter him if he doesn't have to. And the fact that he met up with Jake,
mm-hmm.
or I should say Jake met up with him.
Yeah. Walter's afraid of Roland?
Yeah. Because of his lack of influence on him.
Mm.
As far as I remember, no one else in the movie had that kind of...
Jake?
But I think the people with The Shining, right?
And
they're all kids anyway.
Right, exactly. They don't even... Exactly.
I mean, I guess that's why I didn't think about Jake.
Right, exactly. Well,
if Jake was a kung fu master, then yeah, I'd be like,
sure.
Walter?
Right, exactly. The gifted, right? Mm-hmm, like, the super gifted are all kids, and you're like, haha, you don't know how to use it, bitch. Like,
fucking kill him. Bitch.
Right.
Yeah, I hear you. Also, what do you think of that whole power harnessing, attacking, like a missile shooting into the Dark Tower using the Shinnen kids? By the way, a very cool callback to, that's another thing that a lot of Stephen King books, even the ones that feel completely unrelated, they all relate to each other. Like
The Shining.
Yeah, no, not to The Shining, but to each other.
Yeah,
is my point.
Okay.
There's a weird character connection between The Mist and a character that was like 7 years younger in a different time period and some other book he did that had nothing to do with each other. For example, like Hearts in Atlantis has to do with
Glazed Over.
Have you seen it?
Nope.
Oh, it's a good movie. Good book, too. Anthony Hopkins' character is basically an older Shining.
Okay.
Obviously, Anthony Hopkins. And he meets a younger kid and shit, and it's much more complicated than that. But anyway, and like, oh, that's a nifty connection. And there's an actual character connection between that and other books. So I like how this movie is kind of doing it the same, even though in a completely different way. Because, like I said, this movie is more of a sequel than it is a... Maybe this in the books. I have no idea. I think that was cool. Do you like that connection to another Stephen King book, The Shining stuff?
Yeah, I always like random connections to things.
Cool.
Callbacks and stuff to your prior work. I mean, it feels like Dark Tower is the thing that connects all of his story.
I would say that, all the motivation in this movie is very clear-cut. A lot of it doesn't make sense how they get there exactly. Like, the most obvious thing was that the face of his father, the whole mantra, is that... we knew that Roland was doing it wrong because he was doing it out of vengeance the whole time, right? It's super obvious. None of it was going to... His revelation, his epiphany that leads him to do the kill shot on Walter wasn't a surprise for me.
No.
And not to anyone. And that makes the movie lack in something.
No, the only thing that looks like...
Makes it very straightforward.
Yeah, it does. The only thing that we're trying... It looks like they were trying to do was, you think he's redeeming himself through Jake... Which he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or finding himself again, should I say, through Jake. But you think that he gets there before he encounters Walter. You think that the motivation of Jake being taken and all this stuff, leads to him realizing that, hey, I shouldn't just be about vengeance. I have to think of the bigger picture here. And, you know, or the, right. the right reasons to do things.
Right. And also, it's very anti his character. And I know that this is a sequel, that I'm not going to spoil the way it works.
Right. Well, from what, like, it sounds...
He's obsessed with the Dark Tower in the books. He's obsessed with it.
Uh-huh. Like, from what the movie kind of hints at towards you for about gunslingers is that they're supposed to be obsessed with the Dark Tower. They're supposed to be obsessed with protecting.
I mean, not in the books and not seemingly in the
gunslingers
movie
are supposed
either.
To be like I'm so
protectors. Yeah.
Protectors.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm saying, but protectors of it. So you think that the reason he revolves or he does
that's
anything
funny that
is
you thought
them.
That. I didn't think of that once. I didn't get that notion that the gunslingers are protectors of the Dark Tower. I guess coming from your point of view, since he's the last and really only gunslinger we meet, it makes sense that you think that they're like the Knights Templar version of the Dark Tower, where they have.
Well, they even say like. That his guns are forged in King Arthur's steel, the sword of or whatever. The legend in, on Earth where
in
Jake is from
Gilead.
is the sword of truth. is a King Arthur's sword, Excalibur, right?
Yeah.
What's it called? But in this, whatever he's got, it forged is forged into weapons, into guns.
Yeah.
So that's why these guns can deflect bullets also, because he deflects bullets. He can, or he has this, I guess, power of, I don't know, magic power
of
ricocheting random bullets and shit. Yeah.
Well, he is supposed to be that good.
He's supposed to be that good, but it also is the
Although
weapons.
Some weapons
are supposed to be.
Some of that's pretty ridiculous.
The weapon. It also does rely on the weapon as well.
Well, I love how he was reloading when he was dropping the bullets, and he's in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
That was really badass because that felt just realistic enough and superhero enough. Although doing midair, like we said off air, not very funny. Well, not very good. But that's funny. It's so really cool that you thought that they were like the police force for the Dark
Tower. That's the way I made it seem.
I never saw it that way because they were never that for me in the books. They were never that like that in the books, so I never even thought of that.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing
that's
is
amazing. And I don't think the movie did really anything to show that, except that that makes sense, though. That's the only logical conclusion you could come up with.
That's literally the only thing I can come
up
with.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's really cool. No, but none of that's true, technically.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe it is, and this is a sequel.
Well, what's funny is that you kind of find out that there's obviously tons of respect for the gunslingers, right? He goes into a town, and they're like, is that what I think it is? Let's ask the elder, because the elder knows everything.
Yeah, his guns are like his badge.
Right,
everyone
exactly.
recognizes him from
exactly.
that.
That's a huge thing, right? So, but what's funny is, like, you have to, I love this in what's called in movies when they have to do with, let's ask the elder, because the elder knows from being taught from before or knowing information about before.
He has the longest memory.
Right, exactly. I'm just like, man, poor guy. He doesn't pass his knowledge.
That's
down.
True from the books, though. Every time they go there, they always speak to the oldest people first.
Right.
Like,
makes sense. Listen to the old guy. He's seen him before. But that has like they give him. There's a lot of respect because the whole town bends over for him, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he made it out the longest. The life expectancy is like 7 years older. Shit.
Oh yeah, I remember when I was 12 and saw that gunslinger and he fucked me in the ass. It was great.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There were other points I was gonna say. So, I never really talked about this, but. Again, I think the this movie's use of Providence, Destiny, Manifest Destiny, Kismet, whatever word you want to use, Karma, I think it uses it too heavily. Like, that's its crutch.
It is a crutch, for sure.
Like, to use it lightly is cool. Like, I would say that to have it make that Jake and Roland are supposed to meet, to make Jake the object of desire for the Man in Black to destroy the Dark Tower. And I guess the ultimate destiny that Roland must stop the Man in Black, you know, all of that, I think I'll buy enough. But, like, having everything match so well, like, it's a crutch. It's the reason these people exist. Like the reason Jake was born, the reason his mother died.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, everything turns into its destiny because this movie... could not figure out a very complicated plot from like 12 books to fit into one movie made for the masses. And
right.
I think
well, it does feel very too like this is the exact puzzle piece I need for this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially for Jake, I think Jake's character was.
It's like being in a hospital, like a fuck is give it O negative. Everyone's
right.
O.
Right. It just felt like Jake's character was the fucking god machine in this movie. where he he is everything. Like, he's the reason Roland should gets better, or he's the reason why he's gonna also the reason that the Dark Tower can be brought down, because he's pure energy basically, and the reason why this whole movie exists and all this shit. Like, there's a lot of that in the
movie.
Were
there signs that made him seem like that prodigy of shining power, other than dreams?
No,
no, right?
Mm-mm.
I feel like they should have done. Oh yeah, no, yeah, the telepathy. Telepathy stuff, right?
And it's towards the end, though.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Just,
you're right.
So
you're right. You're right. It was very weak.
And they tell you, like, in the movie, like, he's like, don't use the shine because, like, you can't.
Yeah, he tries using it on when they're eating or something, I think, one point.
Right. He uses it. And also, like, he can technically do what the Man in Black did, where he goes into a room and he sees the what happened in there by, like, touching or looking, whatever. And he saw, like, his mom dying.
Yeah,
it's a super pivotal thing. But he's like, you can't use it because they're tracking you that way. Because, like, being told you have this crazy ability, but you can't use it, man. You get fucked. You know?
What do you think of the? I know it's not really an action movie, but there's as fantasy. It kind of has to be some. What did you think of the action movie, particularly the gunfight scene where he?
It wasn't bad. They fucked the fact that they ruined that one shot, kind of diminished that whole scene though.
Which shot?
The one where he, where you see. Well, you don't know the circumstances of Roland, where he uses like this crazy gunslinger ability that we think he has, or some. Maybe a shine kind of thing where he focuses in on the noise and where Jake is, and he uses the one shot.
The bandit.
That's in the trailer, right? And that's the fact that that's in the trailer that ruins. That kind of takes a lot of away from the movie, from that scene.
Yeah, because you already got him on that level when you start watching the movie,
right? Exactly.
And you the movie is better to make the movie let you earn it more. Like, oh shit, he's that good,
right? But at the same time, like you, in the perspective of where the movie is, he is injured, right? Like heavily injured. He's barely standing up. Like, he just came from a fight that he barely came out of, right? Because he's got injured from before a fight from one of the monsters.
Yes.
That the spreading, the disease is spreading on him or whatever.
Yeah.
The infection
is spreading. That went away pretty fast, though.
No, it went away when they get back to New York. When they get to New York. Because they go to the hospital, remember?
That's right. But and then that's when he says that joke where he's like, oh, I heal very fast or whatever, right?
Right.
And like, yeah, okay, I remember now. I just like that. Okay, I forgot about that scene.
Right.
Continue.
Yeah, so that scene was kind of diminished, but for me, because it's a really cool scene because they do focus on, like, this weird, I don't know if it's a Roland thing that he has or is a gunslinger thing that they can focus on after many things or something.
I would say that, again, on the books, it's 100% just his training. The fact that he is... He's not very smart. He's not, like, the smartest in his culture growing up.
But he's got his craft down so well.
He's so strong-willed that he will... He's like a dog that never stops biting that one. Or whatever. He is so obsessed that he'll do whatever he has to make it there. That's just why he's the last one and lived the longest.
Right.
And he has so much experience of killing and shit and as a hunter and shit that he never has to ever worry about anything almost. Like, that's how good he is. But that's just training, though. He has no power.
Okay.
No, other than maybe destiny, I guess.
Right.
But in this movie, they do heavily put that shit, like, he has some power.
Yeah, they do. It does feel that way.
Especially at the hospital scene where he says, like, I'm better than most. I'm like, how do you know that, bitch? Like, you coming from a world where everyone is like you.
I do love, that he's like, they're like, we're going to keep you overnight or whatever. He's like, nah, I got to leave. And then he pays her for her services.
Yeah.
Here's a coin for your services.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, that's
and she's like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. Well, you know, they have to cure bums off the street, too. They can't pay shit.
But it was just funny. Like, he's like, I need my guns. Like, I need all this, like, back and shit.
That was good. But yeah,
some levity. There's definitely some cool, some good levity in the movie for sure.
We think of the action scene where he has to rescue Jake. You know, before he meets Walter, before that action sequence, he's fighting all these goons and shit, right? In New York to get to the portal. Remember?
Oh, at the very end.
Everybody. He fights everybody. Remember, he gets kicked out of the building. He has to go back in through the way and kill everyone.
Yeah.
What did you think of that sequence? I mean, it's the only real action sequence that isn't the Walter thing. And this movie not action heavy, but it has gunslingers, so I better have some gunslinging.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was cool. Some good action stuff.
I don't think as far as action scenes go, obviously it's no Atomic Blonde, but it is slightly better than Mediocre, but not very much. I feel like I don't know who the director is, but I don't think he's very seasoned in that stuff. But I liked it overall. I just wish it was a little more clear or a little more inventive, and it's because it's also PG-13, so it's not gonna show like horror violence. Another bad thing, because in the books, it's kind of a lot of horror in it. And adult-ass themes. And there's none of that here, unfortunately. Which is, again, fine, but I just wish they were more creative in what they had, what they could have done with what they had.
Sure.
So, I liked it, but, you know, it's funny. I feel like we're bashing this movie a lot. What do we like about it?
We're not bashing the movie. We're talking about what we like. I mean, like I said, the movie has some good levity scenes, when we were saying earlier. Some good relief, right, mm-hmm. from the super hard on stuff. I really love Jake's acting in general, or the actors. I can't think of the guy's name, but yeah. I think he did a good job. What's called for what he was doing. Same thing with Idris Elba. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Guy was just doing his shtick, really. He didn't really do anything special or anything.
Yeah,
it was good.
Yeah,
it's a good villain. I like when he plays villains. Rarely, but he does it. Yeah, I'm with you. I guess I like the. See, I like.
I think we said the good things in the beginning already. That's why.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the overallness of this movie works better than its minutia. So.
Right.
Anyway, so we overall recommend that you won't get lost. You know, adaptation movies. I know are usually like fuck. You know, we have to watch the original source material in order to understand this. You don't. There's not much of that you have to do. Most of this movie.
No, you really don't.
80% to 90% is really easily to grasp, and you can understand everything going on. So that is our review of The Dark Tower, on in theaters currently still. Maybe, actually, because it didn't make much money. Might be out by the time this comes out. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we shall review our latest film, or last film of the evening, and that is Annabelle Creation. Let's see what that's about. Stay with us.
Our sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy.
Hello? You're the Mullins' daughter, aren't you?
Can you help me?
What do you need?
Janice says she's seen your daughter.
My daughter has been dead for a very long time.
She was taken from us at an early age.
12 years after the tragic death of their little girl, a doll maker and his wife welcome a nun and several girls from a shuttered orphanage into their home, soon becoming the target of the doll maker's possessed creation, Annabelle. Okay. This is Annabelle Creation. Interesting way to put that. Starring Anthony LaPaglia. Samara
good
Lee.
Good actor.
Yeah, he is a good actor. Samara Lee, which is the little girl as Annabelle. Miranda Otto. Brad Greenquist, who's... These are just the top build cast. It's all the little girls.
Who played Nancy, man? That's the star, man.
Who played Nancy?
Right, the little girl that gets... the one that falls for... Fuck, what's her name? God damn it. Is it Samara Lee? No, it's not Samara. No, you're right, Samara. Why is she built first? She's like in two scenes, man. Come on.
Right. So there's Lulu Wilson.
Oh, maybe
who's
it was
Linda.
Yeah. Did I get the name wrong?
Janice, you mean?
Janice is the best friend of the one who has polio, right? Who has polio?
No. Linda is the best friend who has polio.
Linda is? I thought Linda was the one that got... I have to spoil in this movie. The one that doesn't have polio. I thought that was her.
Yeah, that is the
okay,
girl.
Okay, who has the one who has it then?
Janice. Tell her the Bateman, yeah.
Her name was Janice? I thought it was Nancy. For sure. I almost fucking... It's just that picture is so... Yeah, I guess that is her.
Yeah.
She looks older in that picture.
For sure.
Guys, come on, she's a little girl. Show her as a little girl. Come on.
Yeah.
Linda's picture is perfectly perfect for a little girl. That's perfect.
Yeah, I saw.
There's all the innocence is there. All right,
the
more I talk about it, the more awful I sound.
The movie does a cool twist, though, where it leads you to believe that one is the main actress or the main person, and then it switches it up on you.
Yeah, that's spoiling this movie. We gotta stop spoiling this movie.
I didn't say who it was, though.
No, I know, but it's just, you know, they watch five. I mean, we're about to start talking about who was the main actor. Once we get to it, people are gonna deduce who the fuck is who now. It's fine. It's just Annabelle Creation. It's creation of Annabelle.
You think there has to be a Nancy in every horror movie? Nancy, no running in the hallways.
I do want that every movie. Yeah. A horror. It's a good name for a horror.
For
movie.
A horror.
Yeah.
Horror.
It is. So
a horror flick chick.
So this movie surprised the both of us.
Yes.
In its quality. It is not a bad horror movie by any stretch of the imagination. But much like the other films we saw today, especially more akin to The Dark Tower, it is still not like a great movie, but it is definitely a good one. And I think the more we talk, I'll see how I feel about it at the end of this discussion, because in our discussion of The Dark Tower, it did went down a little bit in my estimation. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit, though. So, Annabelle, I know I've asked you for the first impressions on all of them, so I'll go first on this one. Obviously, I liked it. Quite good. I think the performances of these little girls, more than the adults, actually, surprised me. And they were actually pretty stellar. They were, like, spot on. They were, you know, Don Draper's the daughter in Mad Men level of good acting in this movie. And that is, what kind of name is that? Talitha Bateman, who plays Janice, the polio-ridden orphan, and Lulu Wilson, who plays her best friend, Linda. Those two kill it. And the other girls, you know, for what have smaller roles, but they also kill it in the smaller scenes. And I wish I could say the same. I mean, Miranda Otto, not her best movie. I mean, she's still been around more, I guess, but, you know, and Anthony LaPaglia.
Well, it's also she's not in it that long.
Anthony LaPaglia, every time I see him, I'm like, where SVU or whatever cop show he was in, you know? Sure. So it's hard to, I don't know, not to detach them from their previous roles, but like, I don't know, they felt very, if they felt like they were just like calling it in, so to speak. I don't know how you felt about that, but the actors, these two girls, spot on. Would you agree?
The two girls, yeah, for the girls in general, I think all the girls did a good job acting how little girls should act, or even the teenage girls, how the teenage girls should act. Mm-hmm. If they felt spot on in their performances, regardless. The LaPaglia guy felt like, what's his name? Felt like the character, and it's a stretch. This is a pull. I'll tell you right now.
Okay.
Is felt like the shovel guy in Home Alone. Like, I bring that up because he's like, he's a good guy, right? Spoilers for Home Alone. he's a good
spoilers for your childhood.
For my childhood, yeah.
Kids, ask your parents.
He's a good guy, right? Uh-huh. Who just wants to do good, but he looks evilish or menacing or whatever, like a bad guy.
Oh, I'm sure. You could just say Snape somewhere more. Like, come on. There's so many other examples.
My friend was watching Home Alone, and she Snapchatted me that she was watching Home Alone.
Yeah.
So that's in my mind.
No, that's cool. Actually, that's a Macaulay Culkin retrospective of his career from the very beginning to now. You know, so that's interesting. I've seen Home Alone stuff recently.
Sure.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you, though. I'm with Deep Cut, but I'm with you, the shovel guy. Yeah, because he was scary to protagonists.
Right,
he was scaring him, which makes sense. Didn't he yell? I screamed at his face and ran away. I'm like, that's very rude, man. That's
super rude.
What is he thinking? Like, fucking dumbass kid.
Well, he just came out, too. Spoilers of why are we talking about Home Alone, but just came out acting all macho, going like, yeah, like, I'm the protector of this house, right?
I make dolls.
Right, and then he sees the guy, and he's like,
Yeah.
And then he hides in his parents' bedroom under the...
Oh, no, I thought we were talking about Animal again. The movie we should be reviewing. I'm with you, though. Only worse acting. Worse acting. So, this movie, I said, the actors are so well done that they make the shitty dialogue sound better.
Also, do we know what year is this?
It felt very turn of the century.
Okay, fucking super turn of the century.
Even the nun, whatever her name was.
No? Sure. The Hispanic nun?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, nice. Because that's all we're good for, being religious.
I guess so.
If she was Polish, that'd be the only other race I could think of that are really religious, and I can see them in the room.
True.
Even her costume looked like turn of the century nunnery costume, right? Like, well, convent style.
Are they supposed to be like 50s?
Supposed to be like, 50s. Yeah, it has to be like that because
50s or 60s latest, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they said the year in the movie. Right.
I don't think they did.
But with the time skip that eventually happens, there's a connection, let's say, to another movie. Yeah. We're not going to spoil how and why. We'll talk about it later.
I guess
it doesn't really pan out for me unless they were really on the sticks and they're like, that place is 20 years behind the real life. I don't know.
Right, exactly.
But since the beginning of this movie, the dad, Samuel Mullins, the Mullins clan, they made their bones making dolls. He has, anyway.
Right.
And he's well sought out by other people. So, like, but the way they, like, you know, there's a scene before the accident, right, that defined their lives. You know, they go to church and they're, you know, good in the community and all that. But the community is clearly like a town that's far from them because they're in the middle of nowhere. You know, weird reference, right? Point A. And then dolls are still the biggest thing. Which, if it really was 12 years before the time that we're that the movie gets to later on, that still doesn't make sense. Still be after Game Boys or something, man. I don't know, like, maybe not that early, but like.
No, I think this movie.
But I don't know if they'd be after
dolls. I think the beginning of this movie starts around in the 50s, maybe late 40s. And then
seems like a big
and then
stretch.
After that, it goes into the 60s or whatever, and then it ends around the 70s, 80s. Because there's a 24-year gap in this movie.
I know, but that still doesn't explain the other movie, I don't think.
Yeah.
That other movie felt more present time. Much more present time. Which is another 20
years. That's supposed to be like 70s or 80s, no?
I mean, I have to see it again, I guess, but I'm not gonna. But maybe you're right, but it just felt much more glossier and more modern to me. Okay, but it's a stupid point right now, but let's just say they're...
Agreed.
Yeah, whatever. So, I want to say that the horror... You know, it's funny, because I like David F. Sandberg. It's not his first film. It's technically his third, but he's the guy who made his bones... He made that short film Lights Out, and then he got offered to make the it came out last year, the feature length version of Lights Out. I don't know if you saw it.
I don't think I did.
About the you know about it though, right? It's a creature that it's like this weird revenge devil witch thing that kills people when there's no lights, and the whole thing is that if there's like a light on you no matter what, that's when you're safe.
Right, that's right, yeah.
It's a good short film.
It was a short film, yeah. I was not going to watch that movie, though.
Yeah, the movie was pretty good, too, though. It wasn't that bad. And then it is basically a longer version with more explanations of the short film. But it's and more death toll, obviously. But it's really good, though. And I really liked his gleaming style. He was starting, you know. And in this movie, I think he does a lot of... he does a little bit of aping. Obviously, all horror movies kind of copy others. But I'm glad this movie doesn't rely on what we're really sick of these days, is the jump scares. It has very little of that, if at all.
Minimal.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Very nice break from it.
Very fresh.
Oh, my God. Probably what I loved about this movie.
So that's his biggest connection is to The Conjuring, which also doesn't rely on that. It relies more on the suspense of the building, the lingering of a door.
Yeah, the lingering of something. It's a mix of that, and it's also, like, you know that it's there. The movie knows that you know that it's there, right?
Yeah, and it's just like stringing you along,
right? And then they do a great job of just all the practical effects, along with it mixed with special effects. But there's a lot of cool practical effects, also.
Yeah, for sure, I would agree. Yeah, that's good.
It depends a lot, also. Like, on
it was effective,
yeah.
Not too much because we've seen it before, but it was pretty effective regardless.
Sure.
Yeah. So some good styles there. I get some aping from The Conjuring and other movies, but it was really good and a good mix of the acting, like I said. The dialogue, as I alluded to earlier, is awful. There's this scene, this kind of a tender scene where Linda and, what was her name again? Fuck me. Linda and Janice are talking. This is a scene when she is confined to the downstairs sofa because she can't move. Mm-hmm. Or she can't, you know, polio and all that. She's down there, and they both start reminiscing on something, and I'm like, you bitches ain't got no life to reminisce anything on. They're talking about, like, as if they're in their 20s, talking about high school and shit. That's literally how it felt. And that scene felt like, why are they speaking so proper and adult? Like, they're kids. And I felt like the dialogue was really not doing a service to some of these scenes. And even though I felt that, I was like, that kid's still nailing that scene, Janice particularly. Mm-hmm. She killed it, like her face, and oh man, whatever acting they got out of her was really good, and I was really surprised. Child actors, they're really a wild card. You don't know what you're gonna get out of them. They're kind of like animal actors.
Yeah. Although I have felt though that child actors, we've been getting a lot more than we've thought we've been getting.
Maybe there's just some more children out there that are trying to be actors that they actually can pick a better version of than they used to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like in the past, maybe. You know, think of Game of Thrones. They got lucky on all these actors that became really good. You know, Arya, for example.
Like the Tyrion Lannister, yeah. Completely.
Funny, funny.
He's still growing.
Like, I mean, it was so crap. They could have grown into worse actors. They could have grown to hate the fucking thing because they're growing up in this production value thing. You know, so many chances that they could have gone wrong, and they lucked out most of the time.
Yeah.
Since we're Boardwalk Empire has a history of nice child actors, especially in the last season. So yeah, very good stuff. What do you want to talk about in the horror and the story? Maybe some of the story.
I'll tell you what I thought about the movie first.
Oh, we haven't said that?
No.
I thought you said it already, but by your...
No, we just started looking up things.
Yeah, it's true.
No, I had fun with this. Same thing, reiterating kind of what you said about just more surprised about what it is. Love the fact that there wasn't that jump scares or didn't depend on it. What's it called? Yeah, and it was a fun movie to watch. It wasn't super like... horror. Like, I felt it was a horror movie, but it didn't feel like it was like this, like everything, nothing needed to be like crazy gore or anything like that. Also, it was, for the type of like, the demonic presence. You also get to see the demon. You normally never get to see an actual demon. It feels like it, at least in these movies.
Yeah, it's not doing the Paranormal Activity where they show you literally nothing every movie.
Right, exactly.
Or, like, literally, like, a 1 second, you know.
Right.
This movie does a bit more. Like, you have a clear vision of what it looks like in your head. At least I do. And it's size, and it's sometimes a smaller size when it's, like, pretending to be the little girl. Oh, the doll, I mean, the little girl doll. Yeah, I think that it's funny because this movie is not funny. A lot of movies do this, but this movie's about the build-up to the climactic equivalent of an action movie, horror sequence, where shit really hits the fan. And the fact that you know it's a prequel, you know that the evil will not be dead in this movie. And not just because it's a prequel, and not just because most horror movies, you know, they like to end their movies with a little, maybe not, you know.
Yeah.
This movie is really unidentifiably like, okay, the bad guy is going to win, just how much he's going to win.
Yeah, exactly.
For example, like, here's one thing. Between Linda and, again, especially Janice, can I get enough of her acting? Especially Janice, for other reasons, too, in the plot. Those are the only two girls whose lives you care about in the movie. Would you agree? I mean, the rest, marginally, but not as much.
Everybody else is completely secondary.
Yes, they're completely secondary to them. I mean, I really like the nun overall. Like, she felt a little too daft for me, but like, she really didn't know what was going on when it was supposed to. I'm like, this girl's clearly scared. Just stay with her. Please.
Everybody's a heavy sleeper in this house.
I know, right? yeah, I know. And everything sounds so loud and shit when they're going down. Whatever, it doesn't
matter. I mean, it's night. Like, yeah, everything should sound extremely loud. Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of the first Conjuring film where, you know, that entire family, they have five girls, and you're worried about all of their lives. You know, that movie does a little better of a job convincing you of, like, loving all these people.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoilers for that movie, I guess, for a 6-year-old movie, you know, none of them die. And it's a miracle. It feels like a miracle that it happens, not like a jip, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this movie, I feel it does the same powerhouse stuff, but with just two actresses. And they do it in a way that is, some of it's pretty daunting and pretty fucked up, even though this movie for a horror movie, was it rated R? I bet it was. I should probably check right now. Maybe it wasn't. I'm not 100% is my point. So, cause it didn't feel rated R. Oh yeah, it's rated R. Okay. I think they do swear in the movie too. Anyway, for a rated R movie, it was more PG than I thought it would be because, you know, the jump scares and stuff, the horror images, Or that of a supernatural thing, which you can show kind of anything you want. So, like, I was surprised how they were able to maneuver all of the stakes and peril constantly between Nancy, Linda, Linda and Janice, and what they had to go through. So
Nancy.
I know. I really want to get to spoilers, too, because there's this halfway point in the movie that probably has my favorite sequence.
What I actually like about the movie, the pacing in this movie is great. There is, it just...
it trugs along right away. Even though this movie's 2 hours long.
Right. It didn't feel 2 hours long.
It didn't feel 2 hours long.
Right. It did not
and
feel.
It just, and it just, it chugs away at it. It starts off and you're just like, okay, you get the beginning. That's like probably the slowest scene, the slowest of the, yeah. the movie is. Yeah. And it picks up after that and you're just like, this is fucking aces. Like, everything you think is going to happen, you get hints of like what's going to be used in the movie also.
Like the seat.
Right, exactly. Come on, guys. Like, that's fucking obvious that we're going to be used it somehow, right? It's going to fucking malfunction at one point. Electronics always malfunction when it comes to demons, right?
Yeah. So, especially the turn of the century.
Especially.
I don't know where the fuck they're in.
Right. By the way, Hollywood must have, like, a surplus of those gigantic flashlights.
What do you mean,
those really big metal flashlights.
Was there a big metal flashlight?
Yeah, because they use it when they're under the covers.
Yeah, they do. Like, the silver one, right? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, the fleshlight.
Fleshlight.
No. The fleshlight model that they model it after.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was not the real fleshlight.
Yeah.
Anyway, how do I know that? Don't ask me. I like that stuff. I feel like we can't really talk about this movie anymore without spoiling
it. Without spoiling it,
so let's get into it now. Spoilers for Annabelle Creation, creating now.
She wanted permission to move into the doll so she could be with us forever. We said yes, and that's when it became stronger.
Bitch dies.
Bitch does die.
Okay, so Annabelle only got revenge. Annabelle only got revenge on the parents, right?
So Annabelle was a little girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the demon takes. So when Annabelle dies, it is an Annabelle in there.
No, it's not Annabelle anymore.
It was never Annabelle. It was always the demon.
Right.
And he was like manipulating the parents to give him the power and permission to go into the doll and therefore get enough power eventually to take over someone.
Sure.
Which is what demons do. They love possession.
Right.
Very cool. And also follows the exact same rules of The Conjuring and the previous end of a film. Very nice.
Also, is there like a weird thing where it only manifests in certain times? Or is it always waiting for the right time? And because it's like, I'll bring it up because they do the 12-year markers. And it's done twice.
Yeah, I know.
So, like, that's what I'm asking. Is it always manifesting in those times?
I don't know if the 12 is any significance to the previous films. Maybe, like, when the Warrens get to it, maybe it was another 12 years. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to think about. Also, well, the Warren movies, the Conjuring movies, those were all in the 70s, right? 70s, 80s.
Yeah, 70s, 80s.
Yeah, because that's a whole period thing.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so I don't know what it means, but yeah, it's cool. So the rules of this thing really works. I think it's more like patience, though. And I think, what did you like of the reasoning for these girls coming in, like
the orphanage?
Yes,
I thought it was cool. That was a nifty thing. It's just weird, like, where are they coming from?
I think
that was more of that.
Yeah, because they felt like they had no other place to go.
Right. So, like, is it obviously not the town they're from, right?
Right. But they were used to shittier conditions, right?
So. Right. So they were obviously living in like some church,
maybe some convent or something.
Exactly.
Full of other girls.
Right. Exactly. It has to be from like some other town that was close enough, but not super far away, like maybe a couple hours away, like 2 hours away or something like that.
Yeah.
So
what do you think is, I know that the reason is because I think the father said at some point, towards the end again, I hate that actually, he admits that they wanted, when he's telling the story, or maybe the wife's telling the story, that they wanted this because that, you know, to fill in that hole in their lives, and it's been a long time, and they wanted to do like a good thing, right? Something like that.
Wanted to repent, I think, also.
Repent. Probably repent and then do a good thing also, right? And that's what led to this evil, because that, you know, brought in evil was like, ooh, juice. Yeah, I can take. I hated that that reason came so late in the game, because it was like too little too late, for my opinion. I know it was all part of the larger story of the exposition dump.
Sure.
I just think that...
it did come very late,
though. But also, this movie has a big problem of, you know, no one's talking.
Yeah.
None of the adults are talking. No one's saying anything. Not even, like, Paglia, whatever, the father, Mullen, Mr. Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
He purposely doesn't tell anything to anyone when he has, like, two or three perfect chances to start talking about this thing. The second you get a whiff of something weird going on, slash evil, slash whatever, an accident happens, like two or three accidents happen before poor fucking Janice gets fucking possessed. And how do you not do or say something immediately? You know what it is. Even if you don't know what it is, how do you not highly suspect what it is?
Right.
So I found that shit very hard, like a stretch of my disbelief, suspension of disbelief. Do you feel the same way?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, was it annoying for you as it was for me?
A little bit, yeah. No, it was, because it's just like I felt a lot of the times were just like none of the adults want to, not even the adult kids like want to, or adultish kids.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the best way supernatural horror works is that, or supernatural anything works, is that you can have whatever crazy magic you want to have or whatever, as long as you put boundaries and rules to it, so that way you adhere to them, people understand them all. And most importantly than that, every human being around them, anything that's based on any sort of reality, which is whether it's gravity or a period in some bumfuck Arkansas town they're in, or the fact that they're human beings and little girls, they have to act like them. They have to fucking make sense. And I think a lot of this movie doesn't really adhere to that reality.
Yeah, the only one you can forgive is the mom. Right?
Yeah, the mom, well, I can't understand her.
You can, because she's bedridden and all that stuff.
And also less chances to act at stupid scenes. Because
exactly.
She's only three.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So that's fine. But the father is unforgivable for those things also.
Very unforgivable.
And kind of the same thing with the nun, who just plays coy a lot of the times. Although she does have a lot of excuses where she's like, I'm respecting boundaries in this house and stuff.
Right, yeah, I can see that, for sure. And I was able to buy her shit for, buy her reasons for a chunk of the movie until the third act, really. What do you think of the fact that Janice has polio? It almost seems like the only reason she has is for us to feel sorry for her? Or is it a bit more, are they alluding to us like, oh, slim pickings for the demon to take over? What do you think about that? Because there's no other reason. I mean, they don't have to make her that way. They could just make her a simple outcast. Like, could you just make an outcast, in general an outcast? Or have her... Or, like, do they want to show scenes of someone who can't move out of a chair that's moving? Things like that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't know. I think it was a mix of the fact that it's a good person to pick on right away as a prey. Because she is kind of... She's strong-willed, right?
Yeah.
More
than
right?
I thought she'd be.
Because of it, but at the same time, she's very weak at the same for the same reason.
Yeah.
So it's a good prey. That's the way I see it.
Hmm.
So...
I think I'm going to lean more towards, like, I can see maybe the writer's room thinking, like, writer's room, I don't know how many writers are in this, but I can see them thinking, like, well, you know, if she is, like... You know, like at first she has crutches, right? Like that could be a term, like she can't run, you know, she's the one lagging behind, and you can use those scenes and this ability to emphasize horror in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
And then when she has a crazy fucking accident, which is insane to me, you know, where she falls off at the top floor and she breaks, not breaks her back, but gets herself confined to a wheelchair. It doubles that down, right? It doubles down from that point. And I think for me, the most horrifying scene when she gets possessed.
Yeah.
Which is like a little after halfway of the movie, around the halfway.
Right, around halfway.
Oh my God, that was really good. That was really good. Now, I mean, it was the movie's horror tropes and antics, they worked well. It's not like they made me scared or anything like that. Again, it wasn't like that itself. It was the fact that I cared so much about Janice. Like, Jesus, don't take her. And it took her. And the worst part about that, really, when you finish the movie, is that she never gets out of that.
Yeah.
She's always possessed. Like, always. She's never herself anymore.
Right.
And that's insane. And that was cool. And that was a cool way to... That was a dark twist for a roughly conventional movie, especially you know, in Hollywood, they kind of are afraid of, you know, taking down children like that. And which is why we're probably all excited for it, because it preys on children and shit, and we know some of those fuckers are gonna die. That trailer, man, Anyway, so I think that's really cool. I think it's probably the best power of this movie, honestly. The fact that it takes down Janice, which is my favorite character, and the best actor in the movie, and then lets her do, you know, the reverse acting and be the weird, creepy one, by, you know, by the third act and shit. You know, I really think that worked out. And I really thought that Annabelle Mullins, the OG girl, who didn't have much screen time presence necessarily, but she, you know, she already had that evil kind of look on her. She had that, you know, the good son from that movie, kind of look about her. So when she had to emote some more horror as the demon possessed her and shit, like, that was pretty easy to figure out. But it was Janice that really surprised me the most.
I agree.
Yeah. Anything you want to say about any of that? And transformation in acting or and Janice the character or whatever?
Janice the character? No, I mean, I basically agree with what you just said. As far as, what's it called, the whole freakiest part in the movie, especially for Janice's thing, is when she turns, what's it called, or when she gets possessed.
That was in the barn too, right? Oh.
Yeah.
He's thinking, so that demon that went after her, right, when he threw up on her, it was Annabelle who was throwing up in her mouth.
Oh, my bad, yeah.
Right? Oh, that's fine. Remember? So, here's one a little lost in the mythos of this grand tale of Annabelle's and Conjuring movies, is that, is there like a separation of powers between the doll and the demon? Like, is the demon in two places now? Or is the remnants of Annabelle, the girl, in the doll, and the demon is in Janice?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that's what ended up being.
I don't think the movie was super clear about that.
I don't think it was either. But, yeah.
Because I really... I'm curious why they kept the name Annabelle, too. Makes me think the opposite again, where, like, oh, maybe it was Annabelle that went into Janice, and the demon is still in the doll, or parts of it? I don't know. It's kind of hard to... You know, I don't know. This is strange. I don't think it was very clear. But
no, I don't think it was very clear.
I almost don't care, but, you know, that 12-year jump skip makes me rethink this whole thing a bit.
Right.
So, yeah. So what did you think of the third act, how it all, like, shaped out? I mean, were you... You know, when that one girl who's in the shed, too... Oh, my God, the scarecrow.
Dude, okay, well, you see that coming, right? That's what I like about the movie. The movie shows you things, like... They mess with the scarecrow, like, scarecrow, whatever, right? And you're like, oh, that's coming back. Like, the well, that's coming back. Like
the well, yeah.
Like, you just don't know how, right? And you know it's going to come back, and you don't know how they're going to use it or for what. Mm-hmm. But you know it's going to be in some way, someone's going to fall in the well or something, right? Or something close to it. That scarecrow's going to come and attack somebody, but you don't know how. Like, and they do it really well. That's what I like about the movie, does well.
Yeah.
So what you were saying about the scarecrow?
No, I really thought that because that older, slightly older girl that was stuck in that shed at the time, which, by the way, why are you separated from the door? I knew it was going to close on her. Right. You know, she has her own little sequence, and she's the one that believed, she was the more, the bullier one, or the one that believed this whole thing the least.
Yeah.
So I really thought she was going to die, because the whole twisting of the light bulbs was really cool.
Yeah.
I really thought she was going to die, and they didn't, and it's fine. But I just wanted to highlight that scene because considering that...
I think, honestly, thinking about it right now, mm-hmm. Sorry to cut you off.
No, sorry.
But for the demon thing in Annabelle, I think it's just the demon was always in the doll, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they called her Annabelle because that was the daughter's name, right? The daughter's name was Annabelle.
Yeah.
And I think the demon found a way to get out of the doll a long time ago and is just not in the doll anymore. What's it called? It got far enough to get out of the doll when it attacked the mom. What's it called? From the right?
Yeah. Oh my God, that scar was crazy.
This car was fucking crazy. What's it called? And when it came out and attacked the mom, right? Mm-hmm. Super Phantom of the Opera, by the way, with the mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And the doll was just there as that's its conduit. That's the only way it's there is through that. So you get to the doll. You can stop it, right?
Yeah.
That is the conduit. That is what you stop it from getting out. But in the end, the demon can roam free. And they use what's it called? Annabelle, the ghost of Annabelle or whatever, mm-hmm. right? As just as a ploy, like, oh, I can make you see her because, you know, she's around or whatever.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards the decision that I don't think Annabelle in any way, shape, or form, she's never really there.
Right. Also, by horrible accident with the way she died.
Yeah. Jesus. Slow down, dude.
Right.
Yeah, she was stupid, too. But the little, that's the whole point. The kids are stupid. Like, they have to keep an eye on them all the time. Yeah, that was crazy. I'm surprised that none of those got hit. But yeah, anyway. So let's talk about the stingers, I guess. Weird stingers. There's like fucking Fate of the Furious level stingers in this thing. So do you remember, have you seen Annabelle, the OG? The first Annabelle movie? The only one, I guess? Oh, there's two. I don't know. This is the third one or the second one?
The Conjuring movie? Maybe?
No. Annabelle. They made a movie called Annabelle.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. You ever seen it?
That was with the...
So I'll explain.
Hold on. Before you get into it. Yeah. I just want to make sure I saw it. Then I think I did see it. That was with the two chicks who had the doll, right?
Well, I'm trying not to... I mean, I know that they brought them in for both, but I know that in the first Conjuring, when you first get this, you know, first introduced by to Annabelle with the Warrens, they do go into those two nurses slash those two roommates or whatever that had Annabelle for a while, and they do flash to those scenes, you know, and it's only that brief time, and then a little bit more at the end. That happens, and I don't remember if those two people are also, I think they are, also in the Annabelle movie as a rehash of that same story. So I don't know if they're in both. But let's just say yes, for the lack of matter, for the lack of terms or whatever.
I did see the movie.
You did see. You recognize the actress, right?
Yes.
Especially the actress with the short hair. That's how I remembered it. So, the stinger of this movie.
Alfred Woodard? Yeah.
I don't remember.
The black chick. I remember the black chick. The black woman in there.
Oh, okay. Sure. Mm. I don't remember that. So, the movie ends with, Janice is possessed. She goes, she manages to escape that weird room with Bible staples. Mm-hmm. Staple to it. Yeah. Bible pages.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah,
pretty cool. She escapes and she manages to get herself into another orphanage, get adopted as Annabelle, first name Annabelle, and
through Janice's body.
And then it skips 12 years.
Mm-hmm. To the Conjuring.
No, to Annabelle the movie.
To Annabelle the movie.
Right, not Conjuring. At first I thought it was a Conjuring movie. Like, no, I think this is Annabelle. To Annabelle the first movie. And where the opening of that movie is that this couple wakes up to a horrible, violent act that happens to their next-door neighbors. Yeah. And these next-door neighbors, there was, you know, they were, their parents were killed by their daughter, their adopted daughter named Annabelle, which is Janice.
Yeah.
And that was the big, you know, stinger, the big reveal stinger. What did you think of that?
That was awesome.
I mean, did you know that you were watching a previous movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me too, but I wasn't sure.
I didn't know where, though. I didn't know what was
the connection. Me either. I wasn't that looks familiar.
When I saw the couple, I was like, that couple looks familiar, right? And I was like, I can't think of it, right? But when I saw, the moment I saw the what's it called? What are the people called?
People?
From The Conjuring? What's the couple?
Warrens?
The Warrens, yeah. When I saw the Warrens, I was like, oh, it's over. Like, I fucking know exactly where this is.
Oh, it wasn't the Warrens.
Huh?
Those weren't the Warrens. The neighbors?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't them. That was the main couple that are possessed or chased by Annabelle the doll in the Annabelle movie.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It wasn't the Warrens at all. I think it was before the Warrens took the doll. Some story before it, maybe after, but I doubt it. I don't remember 100%. I saw these movies, and except for the first Conjuring, which I've seen more than once, do I remember them. So it's been a while. Might have to revisit them.
Yeah.
I really want to know. So anyway, and then there's another weird, you know, like a little teaser, not a real stinger really, after the main credits pass and you see Annabelle there and it moves a little bit before it cuts away. And then you mentioned there's a final stinger at the end of the movie, which I missed. So
well, you missed it also in the middle of the movie where they show a picture. It's like right in the beginning of the movie when the orphanage becomes an orphanage again. An orphanage, and they're like they're showing pictures. The adults are talking, expose, and they're like, oh yeah, these are the three nuns that I got really close to in a convent in Europe or whatever, right? That I went to go visit, and then she shows, and then they hint that they saw that the nun was in there, the nun from one of the Conjuring movie, The Conjuring Two,
yes,
right, and which is actually like a gigantic force that's been. Whatever, right? So anyways, they mentioned they hint towards that and they show her face like kind of like in this 3D image kind of thing, right?
Right.
And then at the very end of the movie, it's like Romania or whatever.
But it's like, that's like earlier times, right?
Way earlier times, yeah. Okay. Like this demon's been around for like around the block, you know? Yeah. And what's it called? And it's turning off all the, it's like going through a corridor in a church or something, or catacombs.
And the candles are going out.
And the candles are going out, and then you kind of see like sort of her face. And that's how it
nice.
Ends. So, well done. Bless you.
Thank you.
And again, so yeah, but that was actually pretty cool. I mean, it looks like they're just tying up everything that they have, all the main stuff.
Yeah, I think they're just making a big, nice, like, hyperlink connection. I think they really found success in these movies, because considering they started off with this, like, gamble of a movie called The Conjuring, and it became so successful and so well made that based on the strength of that, they've made, like, 5 other films. Some, and they're all related to each other, but not exactly, except for one of them. No, they're not really sequels to each other. Some of them become prequels and sequels and... And what's a spinoffs, right? But you know, just kind of cool that you know at least half of these movies are working, the other half not as much, and I obviously none of them has been as great as The Conjuring, which I still think is a great movie. The rest of these are just, you know, good to passable movies. But Animal Creation, I recommend it. It's a lot more fun than I thought it would be, and I'm really surprised that the F. Sandberg guy is getting some. You know, some chances to show his horror props, his shit. So I think that's it on the review. Unless you have something else to say, I think we milked this one pretty well. Anything?
Yeah. No, that's it.
Cool. All right, we'll call it quits right there. And that's it for our show, folks. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Again, this is me alone here doing the exit, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And you might be able to tell that I recorded both the opening and the exit at the same time. Movie magic. So, don't forget to send us a review on all these films. If you agree or disagree with our takes, that would be great to know what you think of these films at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Don't forget our bonus episode this month is Detroit. Check that out for us if you're willing to know. You can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd for my movie watching habits at Armand Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph's Twitter handle is GamerRalph with, all one word, I think. So, let's see what else here. For the next time. Yeah, I get to pick the next films. Remember, guys, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out typically every other Friday. And even though we are trying to figure out what our marathon will be for next time, we haven't solidified that yet, but we will by September, I wager. I'm going to force these guys to, you know, figure something out with me. But we have 3 new films we're going to review next time, and that's 2 weeks from now, so we'll be reviewing Bong Joon-ho's latest film that's out on Netflix right now. It's called Okja, which I think is about a super pig. Can't wait to find what that's about. We love his films. Well, at least I do. Can't wait to find out. The guy who did Snowpiercer most recently. We'll also be reviewing Steven Soderbergh's latest revamp, I guess. He came back as a director, even though he said he quit, with Lucky Logan. And that one looks like fun. I've only seen one trailer. It looks like a fun romp or some sort of like espionage type deal. Like, no, a caper. Like a caper film. Yeah, see? So we'll be reading that film, which is, I think, out this weekend, the weekend that this show comes out. And the next one will be a much more recent release. I think it comes out the weekend that we are supposed to review, if I'm not mistaken. When the next episode comes out, I mean. We'll be reviewing Wind River. And I know nothing about it except for the cast, so can't wait for that movie. And we hope that all these movies pan out in its quality, in their qualities, I mean. Some of these are pretty much shoo-ins for me, in my opinion. So until then, my loyal cinephiles, I am Oscar. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. What the hell was that?
I mean, who can forget the face of Dennis Haysbert?
How do you shoot fast enough to where a straight line of a bullet goes slower than the ricocheting bullet?
Oh, man. I mean, he is supposed to be that good, but not like he can't load a weapon like that in midair. That's stupid. That was stupid.
No, it came out as is, right? Or it came out in the package like that. It was already
no. Like that. I like how fast he was reloading. It was realistically.
Realistically, sure. But no, that was a bullet loader, though. So.
No, I know, but like in midair, both of them in mid.
I get it, but I'm saying there's a bullet loader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a scene in the first scene, chapter in the first book where he takes out an entire town.
Oh, really?
Jesus Christ.
Well, so he's chasing the man in black, right?
And he's just going, you forgot the face of your father.
It wasn't funny. That was so fucked up. Because they just, you know, Stephen King doesn't shy by, you know, describing the eyeballs popping, sure, little girls dying and shit.
Oh, by the way, go and watch Annabelle. And you're like, all the horror movies are about to come out. I kind of want to see the one that comes out on October 13th, for Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that one looks like
fun. It looks fun, and it looks
super fun. I forget the name
fun.
Of it, I forgot the name of it. See that shit. I must see the shit out of that
one. And then I saw the It trailer, the extended one, for the first time.
That's the one, yeah. When he's convincing the kid to come over, like, fuck you, get away from me, you fucking clown. Get the fuck away from me, you piece of shit. Yeah, it was, oh my God, that was actually, and his voice was just right. I'm like, oh shit, this movie might scare the shit. I mean,
okay, by the way, my theater was still packed. I went to Crown.
Really? Yeah.
My theater was packed. I was like, this fucking movie came out a week ago. Like, why are you, and it's a Thursday.
Yeah, I get, no, that number one movie right now. Number one movie.
What the fuck you guys doing out? Yeah. Anyway.
Slim Pickens, man.
Clearly.
Nobody wants to see Hitman's Bodyguard. I'll tell you that right now.
I do. I actually want to see it.
I want to see that more than Annabelle, but I guess
sure.
I.
Sure. Well, it just came out too. That's just coming out today. Friday.
Oh, I thought Annabelle's been out for a week?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Annabelle came out last week.
You're right.
And then Hitman's Bodyguard.
So Hitman's Bodyguard might take it over now.
Might take it over. Yeah.
Okay, I hear
it. It's not Denzel, right?
No, it's Black Joke. No, it's Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson.
And the white guy.
Yeah, Green Lantern.
The white guys all look the same, though, for real.
They
for me.
Fucking do.
For me, they do.
Yeah. Anyways, no. This is one like group of three people, right, or whatever, who the guy was... The movie, he was the one going bonkers in the movie theater.
Oh, shit.
Right?
And he was reacting to everything.
Dude, in the beginning, right?
Like, watch that door, bitch! Or something.
No, it was in the beginning, there was about some. It wasn't even a jump scare. It was like something stupid, right? He's, oh, fuck. And everyone just started laughing at him. Everybody just started laughing at him. Right? And then he jump scared for real, like the next actual time that came up, right? And then after that, you just, like, because he wasn't too far from me, and I was behind them, you just saw him go like this. He huddled down, and he was just like this for the rest of the movie. And he didn't make any more noises than everybody else did, but it was really funny.
Poor bastard.
Poor bastard indeed, yeah.
It's like me when I watched something.
Did you stay for the very end, or no?
For the doll that moved a little bit.
No, there's one at the end of the credits.
Oh, fuck you. What was it?
It was, I didn't get to see the writing because I was waiting for Ashley to get out of the thing. I think it said, Romania, 1794. I forget the year.
What?
Yeah. And then they show, like, a corridor, like, catacomb-ish thing.
Yeah.
With, all the, what's it called? all the candles blowing off, right? Okay. As this entity is walking towards you, and it's the nun. And they show like a super small glimpse of the nun from
The Conjuring,
because they showed a picture of her in the.
Did they
in the movie? Yeah.
Wow.
The nun. She's like, I went to go visit these other nuns over there in the secluded nun whatever thing that they have, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I was really close with these three friends, and the guy's like, who's that other person? He's like, I never noticed that. And it was like only like a flicker of whatever, and like, it was like kind of like a 3D image kind of thing, right?
Okay.
Where you saw the nun in the background, like she was there.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
that was probably the scariest thing in Conjuring 2.
The nun,
give or take.
The nun was the fucking scariest thing
in the painting in the painting room.
That was fucking scary.
You know what's scarier than that? Fucking it, fucking playing with this fucking toy. What the fuck is it doing to that boy?
What?
It's fucking scary in that trailer.
What toy?
In the paper.
Oh, yeah, the paper book.
Jesus.
Fucking crazy.
The scariest thing about this Annabelle movie is this fucking trailer, son. No joke.
So what's funny is that we bought our tickets an hour early, right? And we showed up like 5 minutes after the first trailer started or whatever, right? And I get there and they were like, you better go in there fast because it's filling up. I was like, what?
No, man. Okay, so. I don't want you to watch the trailers very much. I just like, I literally have my headphones in, listening to Harmontown, and I'm like snapping or something.
Yeah.
And then, a second I look up, I go, oh, wait. And he's like offering the thing to the kid. I'm like, oh, I saw the trailer. I look up, like, I took my headphones off, eyes wide open, unblinking. I'm like, what are you doing? Just in my head, I was like, what are you doing?
Right.
Just take the kid already. Like, put me out of my misery.
You have forgotten the face.
You forgot the face of his father. Ah, oh, Jesus. You ready for this review? Fuck you, it. Oh, man. 5, 4, 3, 2. I did finally see it without Darren Aronofsky.
And I told her, because she was like, what the fuck did I just watch?
That's how everyone acts in his movies.
Right, and I was like, it's Darren Aronofsky. And she's like, who? I was like, the director. Like, you know, the guy who did Requiem for a Dream. You've seen Requiem for a Dream? She's like, yeah. And I said the same thing about that movie when I first saw it. What the fuck did I just watch? And I was like, well, there you go. That's literally...
ass to ass.
I go, that's literally the movie for, like, that's the everyday movie for Darren Aronofsky. You just go, what the fuck am I watching? Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. That movie makes me cry, man. Requiem?
Oh, Requiem. Okay. I thought you meant Mother.
Yeah, I always thought. No. I'm definitely... We're reviewing that movie, right?
For sure.
If it's Luke's turn that week, we're going to heavily convince him / succumb one of his picks to Mother, right?
Sure.
We have to fucking review that movie.
We'll be like, ass to ass. Ass
to ass. I'm walking across the stage. I make fun of that scene a lot, but that's a very seriously fucked up scene.
Very serious, yeah.
It just, out of context, that's a funny ass fucking line, you know? So, like, I don't know. I'm fucked up. All right. Anna Burson.
You like that, Annabelle?
I did.
Yeah.
So
did I.
I mean, I went in there thinking it was going to be shit. So.
Total shit.
The fact that it was, like, shiitake mushrooms instead, man, I can't eat that. But, you know, it ain't white chocolate truffles either or whatever. So, I guess that's something.
Food.
I'm hungry. All right. Let's do this thing. 5.
Oh, you got more money?
4. No, I don't. I will have it soon.
It's okay.
4, 3. No, I will.
That's fine. I believe you.
3, 2.
12 years after I can't do that. I'm sorry.
Sorry. It's okay.